Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key. Or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away. But I feel alright. I feel alright tonight. I feel alright tonight. And I'll bring you precious contraband and ancient tales from distant
lands. Right, all right, all right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here on this Tuesday morning. Yeah, it seems like a Monday to me, but it's a Tuesday. Yeah, man, two for Tuesday. So get your requests in now. One artist, two songs. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Coming up in just a few minutes, our good friend Tom Appel is going to join us. He is the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. You can follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. Tom jumps in here. We talk about all the latest in automotive and car news, and we answer any and all of your car-related questions. If you're looking to buy or lease a car, or you need some advice in anything in the world of automotive questions, we will answer them for you. When Tom joins us in just a few minutes, our phone lines will be open, of course, and you can jump in with any car or automotive question that you have. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. So over the weekend, that Hobbs and Nobbs movie opened. Tom, did you see it?
I did not.
My parents did.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, did they review it? Did they
did not like it. they just thought it was really stupid. But yeah, I mean, normally we go to a movie every Saturday. So I was at the Flashback weekend horror convention all weekend, which is why I took yesterday off, because I had to relax. So they went anyway. And they were not too thrilled with Hobbs and, what the hell is it called? Hobbs and Shaw?
Hobbs and Shaw.
Right, okay. In honor of that, though, we are going to talk about, like, the best buddy cop movies, which is kind of like that, and the worst and best movie spinoffs, which, of course, this was a spinoff of the Fast and Furious franchise. So we will jump into all of that stuff. We also have some SNL facts that you might not know about. That's all coming up on the show. Again, our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk, text, and your Two for Tuesday request.
Yeah, man.
And also, you can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. And the best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Nick D Show. So like us now. Whatever's happening on the show is happening on the Facebook page. So facebook.com/Nick D Show. Let's say hello to my producer, Tom Hush. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Nick. How you doing?
All right. How are you?
Not too bad. Not
good.
Too shabby.
I want to thank Dane Neal for sitting in for me on both Friday morning and yesterday morning. Thank you, Dane. We appreciate that. And I saw you over the weekend, Tom.
Yes, yes.
We were at the Flashback Weekend Horror Convention.
It was awesome.
Yes, it was. It was great. And I got to meet a lot of really cool people, and I always, you know, I always have a great time at the Flashback convention, and you know, it's just everybody is a horror fanatic, and everybody, you know, we all act like dorks the whole weekend, it's a fun weekend. I love it. I look forward to it every year, and it's always like the highlight of the summer for without question.
Well, from the first minute I walked in, you met me in the lobby. We go onto the show floor, and immediately you're like, "Oh, there's Ted Raimi. Hey, let's go talk to Ted Raimi." No big deal. Yeah, this is just like one of the coolest dudes in horror. And then, oh wait, there's Lisa Zane. Let's go talk to Lisa Zane.
Lisa and I, we go way back. Lisa Zane and I go way back. We knew each other back in the early 90s. And her folks, in fact, are big fans of my show. And back when I was on years ago, back when I was just reviewing movies on Roy Leonard's show, they were regular listeners, and Yeah, so they're great, and I got to know Lisa, and she's fantastic. And she was she's back in town now, actually, and she's singing. She's got a band, and she's got some gigs coming up. So we're going to have Lisa down here in studio very soon. Lisa Zane, for those of you, she's been in a bunch of movies and TV shows and stuff like that. But she's kind of concentrating on her music career right now. So we'll get Lisa in here. In the newsroom right now, though, is Vic Vaughn. Hiya, Vic.
Morning, sir.
How are you?
Doing very well.
Did you have a good weekend?
Yeah, I did. It was just Jeannie and I, so we got to spend some quality time. We were on our way to watch that movie Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, but it was Saturday, and it was so beautiful. She's like, you know, you want to spend some time outside? And we ended up just staying outside all day Saturday. And
so how was she with that Brewers series? Is she okay?
Yeah, she made it.
Uh-huh.
I took it easy on her. I enjoyed it. I think the last comment I had was, wow, I think we outscored you 19-5. How does that feel?
Yeah, it was a fun series, man.
Yeah,
it was a fun
cool.
weekend, I got to tell cool. you.
And, yeah, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, the Cubs almost blew it last night, though, man. Mm-hmm. Jeez.
It did not. It was close.
Yeah, it was 6-2. They had a four-run lead, and man, yeah.
Held on.
But they won. So it's, you know, they did win, and so it was a big game. And
yeah, four straight.
Yeah, playing the, you know, the A's are a good team. The A's are a pretty strong team. So mm-hmm. it was cool to see the Cubs win that one. But yeah, I was thinking about you and how you and Jeannie were getting along over the weekend.
Thanks.
Yeah,
we survived.
Yeah, very cool. Very, very cool. So. So what was your favorite part of the flashback weekend there, Tom? That was your first time.
Yeah, first time.
That was my 18th flashback weekend.
Oh, man.
Yeah, 18 years I've been a part of it.
And it still thrills you every year?
It's fantastic. I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can see it. I mean, I already can't wait to go back next year because I would say my three favorite parts were your Q&A with Rich Coase, Sven Gulli.
That was
so cool.
That was fantastic. We celebrated the 40th anniversary of Rich Coase playing Sven Gulli, and I was lucky enough to host the big 90-minute show, and Virginia Madsen dropped by to say hi to Sven, and so did Ted Raimi. And we had wonderful archival clips and bits and stuff like that, and it was just great to talk with Rich. And then Saturday night, they had the private party over at the VIP private party over at Caddyshack, the Murray Brothers Caddyshack restaurant, and they brought out a specially made cake that looked exactly like Rich, with his head, and there was a chicken and all that stuff. And Rich gave me the first slice of cake, which I was very pleased about. But it was a great, yeah. No, that was really a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was super fun. Yeah. Your Q&A with Lance Henriksen, and we got to have a little moment.
We did.
When something happened with the water pressure.
Well, the fire alarm went off.
Yeah.
And they evacuated some of us, not everybody. Lots of people just stayed in. But the fire alarm goes off, and I didn't even know it was a fire alarm. And then suddenly they're like, well, you guys have to go out. So we're outside hanging out while the ambulance showed up. It turned out to be just like a water pump problem or something. There was
nothing
horrible or anything. We were back inside in 15 minutes. We were probably outside for 10 or 15 minutes. But during that time, Lance was out there, Lance Henriksen. Having a cigarette, and we came up and chatted with him.
Yeah, and he told me that I had an interesting name.
Yes.
I couldn't believe it. I was freaking out.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the Night of the Creeps reunion.
Which was hilarious.
Couldn't believe it. It was so weird to see that entire cast and Fred Dekker up on stage just having a ball.
Yeah, no, the panel was a lot of fun. I haven't seen that movie. I mean, I hadn't seen that movie in maybe 20 years. And I only watched about the first 40 minutes of it on Saturday night when they screened it. I watched about 40 minutes of it because we were all the Flashback people who work for Flashback were down in the downstairs and eating pizza. So I went down there and went down there and had pizza. So I missed the rest of the movie. But no, the fest was great. You know, there were so many really cool people and great Q&As and lots of really cool events. And we both bought the same Suspiria T-shirt and we're now wearing it at the same time. We look like a couple of dorks right now. But I have to say, you know, like a lot of the celebrities were really, really cool. Some had been there before. You know, like Robert Englund has been there many times. Bruce Campbell's been a very long time since Bruce was there. It's been 14 years, actually. And I actually got to talk to him a little bit. Sam Raimi, first time there. He was fantastic. But I have to say, Virginia Madsen, it was way beyond any expectations that I had about what she would be like. She is a lovely woman in every respect. It was so great to meet her. When someone kind of exceeds your expectations even more, she couldn't have been nicer. She was she put up with me just fawning over her in the movie Sideways. She just had a lot of patience with, you know, just me talking about how much I loved her in Sideways. She was really, really kind and really, really cool. And her niece was there, and she's a big Svengoolie fan, so I got her to come up on stage, you know, during the event. And so it was really, it was just great. But she is really something. Virginia Madsen was so great with all the fans. Very entertaining in her Q&A. She had a Candyman Q&A, and it was her and Tony Todd from Candyman. And she was very entertaining there, and just she's lovely. That was my favorite celeb meet of this year, without question, was Virginia Madsen. So anyway, overall, fantastic week, fantastic weekend. Mike and me occurs. Nobody puts on a better convention than they do, and they couldn't be more generous or kind with their time. And I got tons of pictures. I just stuck them up on the. In my office, you know, I had all the mm-hmm. in the office. I've got more now, more pictures up there. And it was great. It was just meeting the celebrities, hanging out, and the Svengoolie thing was great. So it was a fun weekend, and it's just great to be, you know, with a whole bunch of people who, you know, like 1,000 people who are of the same mind. Like, we're all dorks. We're horror dorks.
Only downside is that my wallet is very upset.
Yeah,
very upset with me. But it was all worth it.
Yeah. So it was a fun weekend. We're back, though. I took the morning off yesterday just to kind of unwind, but now we're back, and I'll be here all week, and we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we want to hear from you guys. If you have any car or automotive concern or question, 312-981-7200, because when we get back, Tom Appel from Consumer Guide Automotive is here for our monthly car visit, and it's time to answer any and all of your automotive-related questions at 312-981-7200. You don't know what I got.
She'll walk a thunderbird like it's standing still. She's pouring in her leaf and she's stroking fortune.
All right, welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. The great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It is Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. One artist, two songs. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. All right, it is time for our monthly visit with Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. You can follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. And we're going to be talking about the latest car and automotive news. And if you have questions or concerns or anything like that in terms of the world of automotive or car, you're looking to buy a car or whatever, need some advice, need some help, Tom is here to answer your questions and help you out. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Let's welcome Tom back to the show. Hi, Tom.
Well, good morning.
How are you, sir?
I am good. Thanks for having me.
Ah, absolutely. Always a pleasure. Tell everybody about Consumer Guide Automotive and all that stuff.
Yeah, consumerguide.com. That's where all of our new car and used car reviews live. But if you aren't looking for a new car or a used car, but do like to read fun stuff about cars, check out our blog. You can get there from consumerguide.com or just go directly to the cgdailydrive.com.
All right, and it's all there, consumerguide.com. Tom, you join us every month, and we're always happy to have you on. How's your summer been going?
It's been going good. It went fast.
Yeah, it has flown by, hasn't it?
Yeah, it went fast. My kid goes back to school in 2 weeks. So,
oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that fast. It went that fast.
Well, you got to spend some time with her, though, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's been a great summer.
Yeah, very, very cool. Okay, what have you been driving lately? Let's talk a little bit about that.
I've driven two really interesting cars, both Toyotas in the last week. One was the Lexus LC500. This is Lexus's big luxury coupe. It's an insane car. It looks at any distance, it looks like a Ferrari, but it really rides and is built like a Toyota, which means that it's just going to be more affordable to own and operate. But you get the great startling looks. I love the car. It's a big coupe. I fit well in it. It's quick. It's beautifully finished inside. Great car.
And, so that passes on all levels. Anybody else at Consumer Guide drive that one?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We got that one passed around. I think all the editors got into it. Yeah, that's a favorite. It looks fantastic.
Great. Okay, what else?
and I am driving the Toyota Corolla XSE. Toyota redesigned the Corolla about a year ago. They introduced the hatchback version first, and then the sedan is out now. I'm driving the sedan, and I have never been a fan of the Corolla until this generation. This is just a really nice car now. It's just a little bit more lively. It feels more like a small car that someone young might want to drive, much more in the vein of the Honda Civic than it used to be. But I'm impressed. We've been getting fantastic mileage with these cars. We're always breaking 30 miles per gallon.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, that's really great. Boy, the Honda Civic, man, that was a popular car, right?
It was and remains, yeah. Even though car sales are dwindling as SUV sales grow, the Civic is kind of holding on to its niche.
Yeah, I mean, I dated two different women who had Civics. I don't know what that means, but...
When I met my wife, she was driving around in a Civic, a very, very old Civic.
I don't know what it is, man. It's very strange, but I've seen those cars around for a long time, and they seem to, you know, and both of the girls that I dated who had the Civic seemed very happy with their Civic, so...
Civics are the kind of cars that dads want their daughters to drive. they kind of feel good about them. The Corollas are like that, too.
Yeah. Well, it's great. By the way, if you guys want to jump in here, if you have a question or a concern, or you're going to get a car and you need some advice, automotive or car-related stuff, right now at 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. We did get a text in already from the 773 area code, Tom.
Oh, okay.
And they ask, what does Tom think of the 2020 Kia Telluride?
Oh, it's fantastic. For people who don't know what that is, Hyundai and Kia are kind of the same company, but in the U.S. they do business entirely independently. But they both have built new, very large crossovers off new shared architecture. There's the Kia Telluride and then the Hyundai Palisade. They are similar but different enough that people who are considering a large crossover should drive both of them. But the Telluride is fantastic. Recently drove it. It gets surprising mileage for a vehicle that size. The interior is really beautifully finished. But most importantly, it makes fantastic use of space. If you need to put adults into the second row or even the third row, this is a great vehicle for that.
Okay. All right. So recommend it all the way around then.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So how often do you guys drive? I mean, like everybody in the office there at the Consumer Guide, they are driving different cars all the time, correct?
That's correct. Yeah, we have four regular editors who take part in our Car of the Year voting, our Best Buy voting, and we try to get every editor into every car we get through the office.
Mm-hmm. And so does it? You guys take into account the time of year that you guys are driving the car as well?
We do, and we mention it when we need to. It's a big deal when we drive electric vehicles or hybrid vehicles because the batteries are seriously battery performance is seriously compromised by cold weather. So we have to account for that and point that out because just in Chicago, and this is a problem for EV drivers in Chicago, you can lose up to a third of your range in the deep of winter.
Wow, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Because it gets really cold here, obviously. I'm not speaking out of turn here. I think we know that, but that's really interesting. Now, when you're taking in that into account, like let's say you know, because it was really hot and muggy yesterday, and it's going to be pretty muggy today. You guys take that into account too, and what it was the comfort of the vehicle in that regard.
The heat is less of an issue, but it can become an issue if we're just constantly cranking the AC, which can hurt fuel economy. Also, when things get really hot, again, EV batteries don't really like it when it's very hot as well. But cold is really more of a factor in Chicago driving than heat.
Yeah, clearly. And also, do you guys, what happens, you know, if you're test driving one of these vehicles or a couple of these vehicles and we get like 10, 12 inches of snow?
Yeah, we just endure it.
Yeah.
And that's what everyone at the office, when we see a storm coming, jockeys for the all-wheel drive vehicles.
Yeah.
Sometimes that just doesn't work.
Right. You can see, I can see those guys. I can see everybody in the with the all-terrain vehicle, if you can get it.
If you can,
yeah.
But it doesn't always work that way.
Here's a, I don't know, this is a stupid question. Has a car ever broken down when you were test driving it?
Yeah, unfortunately. We had a situation recently, and this was a prototype, and it was delivered to us as a prototype. But Jaguar has developed an electric vehicle called the I-Pace. And at some point during its tenure in our office, it just stopped taking a charge. So basically, it's just dead in the water. We couldn't charge it, so we couldn't drive it. So they had to pick it up with a flatbed. So So we're working with Jaguar to get a replacement vehicle come through the office, and we acknowledge that they said it was a prototype vehicle. But, yeah, it happens sometimes.
Really, that's got to be so crazy when that happens. Brand new car.
It is.
Yeah, wow, wow. So do you put that into the when you do the review? You say, hey, the car broke down?
We will mention it when we drive the final vehicle, but because it was a prototype and because there was a final vehicle coming, and
right.
if the final vehicle actually, the sellable final production vehicle, performs as it should, it'll just be a footnote.
Okay. Glenn says, do you have thoughts on the new electric VW van?
The ID Buzz, which is cool as heck. And Buzz may or may not be a reference to it being a microbus in which people may have or may not have. I don't know.
Right.
But it looks cool as heck. And that'll be, I think, the second of Volkswagen's ID vehicles that'll be coming out soon. ID is Volkswagen's new brand for electric vehicles.
And so you think it's a great ride then?
Oh, haven't driven it yet. I just think it's cool.
Oh, you just think it's cool. Okay, so we'll get a test on that at some point. Okay, Tom, hang on, okay?
Will do.
All right, Tom Appel is with us. He is from, of course, Consumer Guide Automotive, and he's here to answer any and all of your car-related questions or concerns. It's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. And, of course, you can follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom or go to consumerguide.com. All right, quick break, and then we'll come back. More car talk. Right after the news, which is up next. All right, welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiCilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It is Tuesday. I'm here two for Tuesday. We'll get those requests going. One artist, two songs a little bit later on. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. In honor of the Hobbs and Nobbs or the Hobbs and Shaw movie that came out over the weekend, we are going to jump into a couple of topics that are related to that. And we're going to do the best buddy cop movies of all time and the best and worst movie spinoffs, which basically this new movie falls under both of those categories. So that's all coming up on the show here. 312-981-7200 for talk and text and two for Tuesday requests. Tom Appel is with us. He joins us monthly to talk cars and automotive stuff. He's the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. You can follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. And he's here to answer all your questions, and we're going to talk car news as well. 312-981-7200. Let's welcome Tom back. Tom, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right. One of the news stories here says that there's mass casualties from automotive cyber attacks. This was in the Tribune. Can you talk a little bit about this?
Yeah, or potential mass casualties, I think, is the way the story is going.
Yeah.
And it's interesting in that a group, Consumer Watchdog, which I think people have heard of, it's a California group, and they're fairly active, is predicting perilous cyber attacks on the American automotive fleet if something isn't done to allow motorists to switch off connectivity. This seems slightly hyperbolic to me in that cars as yet are not as connected as people think they are.
Yeah.
Even if you have something like OnStar or you're receiving on-air updates or something like that, it doesn't mean that those systems, the systems of your car, can be activated or reached through that sort of cellular action. I think that what we need to worry about is in the future when we get closer to autonomous vehicles and those are going to be connected by probably 5G cellular, that's when I think the time to worry is. But they were talking about how by 2020, according to this article, and I think according to Consumer Watchdog, by 2020, 75% of the vehicles on the road will be vulnerable to some sort of cyber attack. But some sort of cyber attack is a little vague, and I'm not entirely sure what it is that can happen.
Yeah.
There was this famous case a couple of years ago of a couple of high-quality hackers trying to get into a Jeep, and they needed access to the Jeep in advance to make it work. So we're not seeing this stuff yet. It's worth worrying about. I think it's worth certainly protecting ourselves from, but I don't think that we're heading into dire straits just yet.
Okay, but we got to keep an eye on it, correct?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. As we get closer to autonomous vehicles, I think this becomes a very real threat.
Okay. All right. We'll keep updates on that and talk about it soon. We got a couple more texts here, Tom.
Okay.
630 area code says, is it true that if you drive less than 25 miles a week, you're doing internal damage?
Kind of, sort of. The problem is, and this is less of a problem now because everyone's using some sort of synthetic oil or partially synthetic oil, it used to be that if you didn't drive a car enough, moisture would accumulate in the crankcase and it would start to degrade your oil and your oil would get all wet and foamy. That's less of a thing now than it used to be.
Yeah.
But the other problem, too, is that you're not using your brakes, so rust starts to accumulate on the rotors. Fluid can accumulate in the brake lines. There is stuff that happens. You should drive your car a little bit more than that. And if you're not going to drive your car for a while, you should take it out for a really good drive every couple of weeks.
Okay. All right. That's good advice. Carrie says, Tom, two questions. Where is the new Ford Ranger? And with Volvo moving production to China, are there any concerns about quality?
Oh, two great questions. The Ford Ranger is out. We just drove it. We have a review up on the website, but we drove an XLT. Nice vehicle. I'm not sure it stands out in the compact pickup truck field, but it's very good and worth shopping for. As for Volvo, Volvo does some production in China now, and there's a few vehicles available in the U.S. that are Chinese-built, and we have not noticed any difference in quality driving those vehicles.
Wow.
As someone at Volvo told us, it is a Volvo factory that just happens to be in China. Which is a great way to put it.
Right, and, sure. And,
yeah, I mean, the only real difference is it just travels a little bit further before it gets to your dealership.
Okay, all right. And the 773 area code, a different one, says, are Jeep Wranglers or Renegades noisy inside on long highway road trips, and how about the gas mileage?
Yes and yes, but not as noisy as they used to be. Great questions. The Jeep Wrangler, which is the big iconic Jeep thing that we still think of when we think of Jeep, was redesigned last year. And it is a little bit bigger, a little bit quieter, and just a little bit more refined. Drove one on the highway very recently, and I thought there was just a bit of wind noise, but it wasn't really obtrusive or annoying. As for fuel economy, we recently drove a version with a new 2-liter mild hybrid turbo. And we saw 23 miles per gallon, which is the best fuel economy we've ever seen with a Wrangler. And we're still trying to get used to the fact that Wranglers can break 20 miles per gallon.
That's a wow. Okay. All right. Well, we got a few more stories here that we want to get to. How about this Audi ex-CEO? He's been charged with fraud in that legendary VW diesel cheating scandal.
Yeah. This is the amazing story that won't go away.
It really is.
And it's amazing because Volkswagen's already paying the bill for this. If anyone's familiar with the commercials for Electrify America, I might have the wrong name, but I think it's Electrify America. That is actually funded by Volkswagen punishment, punitive damages that they paid. And they're putting up charging stations and shopping malls and parking lots across the country on their own dime. So they're already paying fines and penalties on this in the U.S. But what people may not realize is that Audi is a division of Volkswagen, and they developed a V6 engine that was more or less a parallel development with the small four-cylinder that most of us associate with the scandal. So there was actually different management involved and different people involved who were also complicit, and that's how this Audi guy got himself into trouble. Rupert Stadler, apparently, according to German authorities, at least knew about the scandal or about the cheating and didn't do anything to stop it. I don't think they can prove more than that.
Yeah.
But that's enough, and this guy's probably going to spend some time in the slammer.
It's an unbelievable story. I mean, it really, I remember it, but when did it break? 2015?
That sounds right, yeah. 15 or 16, yeah.
I mean, I mean, I remember when we first talked about it, how stunning a story it is.
Yeah, and I remember at the time, too, we were talking about how much money was involved, and the estimate in the most recent story I read is that Volkswagen has so far spent $33 billion to make this right.
Man, oh, man. That is unbelievable.
It is a staggering sum of money.
It is unbelievable. So this guy here, then Rupert Stadler, he's going to go away for a while.
Yeah, he's going to join Martin Winterkorn, who was the head of Volkswagen at the time, also found guilty of, at the very least, of knowing about it.
Yeah. Boy, that's a great name. What's his name? Martin what? Winterkorn?
Winterkorn, yeah.
That's a fantastic name.
It is a good name.
All right. All right, how about this? What's a smart tire? Tom, can you help us out with this?
I can. It's the last thing anyone ever thought needed to be smart.
Yeah, that's true.
I still don't have a smart toothbrush, but I'm about to I'm about to talk about smart tires. But, right. But the tire thing's kind of interesting. There's three things that are falling under the umbrella of smart tires. One of them is self-sealing tires, which is really not new technology, but it's being handled differently now and more effectively. And then there are tires that are non-inflated tires, which is fascinating. And then there's a type of tire that is going to be used as part of the car's safety systems and will actually report back to the car certain conditions that can be detected best through the tire, like black ice or cold weather or just a lack of traction.
Wow.
But the most interesting part about this is the new non-inflatable tire, which actually uses rubber fins instead of an inflatable bladder. So you will see from the side of the tire these fins or blades that radiate, you know, around the tire. And they're fascinating. They've been around for a long time, and you might see them on construction equipment, but it's looking like we're finally going to see them on cars. The beauty of this is that they should last forever and that they would never blow out, so you'd never have a flat. So they're really cool. They look a little bit weird, and I don't know how designers are going to work around the sort of bladed fan look of them. But General Motors is committed to putting one on or putting a set on production vehicles by 2024. So we'll see what they look like.
And what kind of money is that going to set you back? I mean, it's got to be pretty expensive. Obviously, very expensive tires, correct?
I don't know. They should mount pretty much like regular tires and be used on regular wheels, perhaps. As for expensive, they'll probably be very expensive at first, but they may actually come down to be less expensive than traditional tires.
Okay. Well, what are some of the other tires that we're talking about here?
Well, we have the self-sealing tires, and then we talked about the tires with the sensors in them. And I don't know if a lot of people know that they probably have tire pressure monitors. Those are built into their wheels, but don't really involve the tires. One of the interesting things about the self-sealing tire is that they're developing a tire now that can self-inflate, which is fascinating technology.
Wow, that's amazing. That is well, you know, okay, well, who are doing these things? Who's responsible for some of these? These are
the big names right now are Michelin, and Michelin's working on the airless tires, and then Bridgestone's working on a lot of this stuff right now as well.
What are the quiet tires?
Quiet tires are interesting, and they're usually associated with something like touring tires, but they use a different compound, usually just on the immediate surface of the tire, and could be great on the highway.
Okay. What about the magnetic levitation?
I haven't heard much about maglev in recent years, but we'll see where that comes from. But maglev is an old technology. The Disney Unirail, what's that called? The Unirail.
Oh yeah. So okay. The monorail.
Yeah,
monorail
that was said to be maglev. That never actually happened.
Oh,
that
no.
Actually rode on tires. But maglev is awesome in that you wouldn't use a tire at all most of the time because you would actually use magnetic forces to keep the vehicle afloat.
That's crazy. Wow. Yeah, I was thinking monorail. Monorail is from The Simpsons. I was getting my rails all mixed up here.
There you go. Yes.
Monorail was from The Simpsons. Classic episode of The Simpsons right there. Let's see. Some more texts have come in, Tom.
Okay.
Caribbean Bob says, my wife and I are thinking about leasing a Mazda 3 hatchback. What do you think of the Mazda, and when is the best time to lease?
The Mazda 3 was just redesigned. The hatchback is very nice. The whole Mazda 3 lineup is great. And that's a good car to lease, too, because the resale value is very strong on those, so you can get a very favorable lease payment. In terms of when's the best time to lease, I don't know if there's any time better than another. The rules of leasing and the rules of purchasing are the same. You still want to negotiate the best deal you can, and there's still some truth to trying to do that at the end of the month or towards the end of the year if you can. But leasing specifically, I'm not sure there's a better time than any other.
Okay. How about this? Hi, Tom, from the 706 area code. Which Subaru SUV or crossover is your favorite and why?
Oh, geez. Well, Subaru makes a bunch of stuff right now. They just built the new Ascent. That's their midsize crossover. They make the Forester. That's their compact crossover. And there's the Crosstrek, which is the compact or subcompact crossover. Plus, there's still the Outback, which is the wagon based on the Legacy. Of the four, just full disclosure, we actually own a Crosstrek here at Casa Appel, and we love it.
Mm-hmm.
Although I think next time we might go with a Forester, which is the compact crossover. But they're all really kind of nice.
Okay, great. Tom, hang on, okay?
Will do.
Tom Appel is with us from Consumer Guide Automotive. You can check him out at consumerguide.com. And also, you can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at Car @_guy_Tom. If you want to sneak in here, we got a few more minutes with Tom. It's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200 for any and all car and automotive related questions. We'll be right back. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Coming up at 5, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell. And coming up at 6, the great Steve Cochran with your morning drive. And coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right. We are in the middle of our monthly visit with Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook @car_guy_Tom. And we're talking all things automotive and car related. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Tom, welcome back.
Thank you.
There was a Chrysler concept story that you wanted to talk about. What's going on there?
I did. This has been a story that we've been bouncing around at the office for a couple of months now, and I finally decided to take the time and try and write it. And it's about a period of time in Chrysler's history when it didn't look like the company was going to survive, and what they did to kind of distract the public from that story. And that distraction was something known as ENVI, E-N-V-I. It was short for environmental, and it was a division that they created or claimed to have actually meant to create, which was going to create hybrid, plug-in hybrid, and other green vehicles. And the timing of this is fantastic because everything was just collapsing on Chrysler. But in 2008, September of 2008, they introduced ENVI at a press event, I think in Chelsea, Michigan. And this was just after the Daimler-Chrysler relationship had fallen apart. And it looked like Chrysler was going to end up in the hands of Cerberus, which was a venture capital company that probably was just going to pare the company down. So this wasn't looking good. Gas had spiked earlier in the year at like $4 a gallon. The stock market was on the verge of collapsing. Everything was ugly for Chrysler. So they launched these electric vehicles. And the great thing about the story is that they were so transparently not developed. They were mostly just vehicles that wore EV stickers on the outside.
Oh, wow.
But they made some pretty bold claims for the vehicles. The most convincing of them was a vehicle, and this one is actually kind of cool. It's called the Dodge Circuit, except that it was actually a Lotus sports car that they had actually stuffed batteries into. Now, that was a running, functioning car.
Oh, my God.
But the rest of the cars really appeared to just have EV stickers on them. So
that's really incredible.
It is. And the beauty of it, this is September 2008. Things got really bad for them. And by January of 2009 at the Detroit Auto Show, they launched a couple of more vehicles in the ENVI lineup, but displayed all five of their vehicles there. And it was just so clear to everyone in attendance that these were fake. There was a nice concept they called the 200, and it was a really good design. But the whole talk of this Volt-like extended-range hybrid electric drivetrain just sounded like hooey. They had no history with this, no acumen in building these things, and they're talking about bringing one out by 2010. Anyway, it was just a couple of months after that. The press kit is beautiful, by the way. I finally went and bought one on eBay because I had lost mine.
Uh-huh.
But it's filled with pictures and no substance. But just a couple months later, they ended up essentially declaring bankruptcy and forced into the hands of Fiat. So during this ENVI thing, ENVI, this thing happened between Daimler Chrysler and Fiat, this very short period of time. And the minute Fiat took over Chrysler, they killed the ENVI project.
Oh, man. Wow, what a crazy story.
I love this story because no one seems to remember it. Just the fireworks with GM and Chrysler going to Washington to beg for money and all the stories surrounding the financial woes kind of killed any interest in this story. But it was out there, and there's pictures of these cars online, and they're fabulous.
Wow, that's amazing. That is really crazy. Everybody, check out the piece that that Tom wrote. You can check it out at consumerguide.com. 312 area code says Hyundai had an Azera, but ceased production. I need to know what was replaced if it has a similar model.
No, there isn't a Hyundai, but I believe there is still a Kia Cadenza, but I had to check. Uh-huh. Those were both large mid-sized cars along the lines of the Toyota Avalon, and they never sold well for Kia or for Hyundai. But I think they are both gone. I think they have not been replaced, but you might be able to still find old ones on the lot, maybe.
Okay. All right. And then finally, the most stolen cars in America. Let's talk a little bit about that. They got big engines.
Yeah, and I'm kind of at a loss to explain these. I've been looking for a pattern, and I don't see it.
So, okay.
But, yeah, these are reported by the Highway Loss Data Institute. That's a not-for-profit that is financed by insurance companies, so I think we can take this information as well-sourced. But, yeah, the...
So which ones are the ones that were that are most stolen?
Yeah, interestingly, the Dodge Charger, the Dodge Challenger, the Infiniti QX50, the Infiniti QX80, and then the GMC Sierra. Of those, the Sierra makes perfect sense to me because there are hundreds of thousands of pickups on the road, and those parts will fit a lot of those, so that makes sense to me.
Okay.
As for the Dodge vehicles, the Charger and the Challenger, they're generally high-performance vehicles, and there's a lot of people who could use those parts. I do not understand the Infinities.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. The Charger and the Charger and the Challenger are both cool cars, though.
They're cool cars. Yeah. You can use the parts. A chop shop would love to have any piece of them because they can sell them.
Yeah.
So that works really well. I'm not sure that's true about the Infiniti models on this list.
Yeah, I don't understand. That just seems very strange to me. That I'm going to steal me an Infiniti.
The weirder part about it, too, is the Infiniti QX80 is a fairly expensive vehicle that should spend most of its time in private lots or in a garage. So I don't even know how much access these have to these vehicles.
That's a crazy story. All right.
It's very weird.
Okay. All right. And by the way, people can get the newsletter, right, at the Consumer Guide website?
Yeah. Just go to Consumer Guide, go to Contact Us, and leave me your email address, and then I will send you every Tuesday an update of everything that's new on the website. And that's the only thing we ever send out. You won't end up on any other list, and you won't get more email than that.
There you go. That's it. And so if you want to subscribe, just go to ConsumerGuide.com, and you can follow Tom on Twitter and Facebook at car_guy_Tom. Tom, always a pleasure to have you on, and have a great month, and we'll talk to you next time.
Yeah, the pleasure is mine. Thanks for having me.
Okay, buddy. Tom Appel, everybody. He's great. Publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive and helps out with any automotive and car questions that you will have. He joins us once a month. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DeGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It's 2 o'clock. It's 2 o'clock? It's 2. It is. Well, it's 2:05, actually, but it's Tuesday. 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. Who was that requested by?
That was requested by Rasco, little Kelly Clarkson.
Little Kelly Clarkson.
Start off your Tuesday.
Yeah. You know, she's getting her own talk show.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'd watch it.
It's like a daytime. I believe it's like a daytime talk show thing.
Well,
so I like her, man. I think she's great. I think she's hilarious, and I think, well, obviously, she's got an amazing voice.
And as far as American Idol winners go, she's probably like the best.
Yeah, well, she was the first.
She was the first, and had the most success, really.
Yeah. She, you know, it was so funny because when you know, people who were on American Idol basically signed themselves away. Like, American Idol owned them. And Kelly Clarkson had to make that stupid movie with Justin... What was his last name? Guar?
I can't remember his last
Justin
name.
Justin Guar. Yeah, he was in Guar. I can't remember his name. But now he's the little dude on the Dr. Pepper commercials.
Wait, that's him? That's Justin?
Yeah. The little dude. Sweet, sweet. That guy. On the Dr. Pepper commercials, that's Justin from American Idol. But
Justin Guarini?
Guarini, yeah, that's him.
I did remember when they made From Justin to Kelly.
Well, they were kind of like forced to make it because Idol basically owned them. So when the contract was up, that's when, you know, that was like when she finally was able to do the stuff she wanted to do. So, like, Since You've Been Gone came out right around that time, which is a jam. And and then she started to do her own thing. And I think she's a riot. I think she's great.
I mean, she's had an amazing amount of success. So, yeah. I mean, it's good. It's good for her.
And God bless her, you know, because another thing that American Idol was doing was they wanted her to keep they wanted her to stay skinny. And so another thing I love about her is that she was like, no, I'm going to eat. And she looks like a normal woman. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
She looks like a real woman.
Yeah.
And it's another thing that I love about her. But man, can she sing.
Oh, yeah. One of the best voices in pop.
It's amazing. So, all right. Welcome back, everybody. We'll get to hear another Kelly Clarkson song. Kelly Clarkson! But, you know, Steve Carell had never met her. And like the first time, I can't remember, there was a really funny story about the first time that they met, because obviously, you know, during the infamous waxing scene in 40-Year-Old Virgin, he screams out, Kelly Clarkson.
Yeah.
Kelly Clarkson! But anyway, we'll hear another one of her songs a little bit later on. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. So this Hobbs and Shaw movie came out over the weekend, and my parents went to go see it. I was at the Flashback Horror Convention, and so I wasn't able to attend a movie as I always do with my folks on Saturday. The three of us go see a movie every Saturday afternoon. But I was at the Crown Plaza Hotel all weekend doing the crazy Flashback stuff. So my parents said, "Well, you know, we'll just go see it on our own." So they went to go see the Hobbs and Shaw movie, and they thought it was really stupid. You know, my dad was questioning the realism of the movie, and I'm like, Dad, it's a Fast and Furious movie. There's nothing even remotely realistic. None of those movies happen on this planet. Nothing that would happen in a Fast and Furious movie would ever happen in the real world on Earth. And even he said even on that level it was dumb, you know. So my parents didn't. My parents thought it was pretty stupid, and they also said it was very long because it's like 2 hours and 20 minutes long.
Yeah, it's another one from David Leitch.
Yeah, who directed John Wick, and he did one of the Deadpool.
He did Deadpool 2. He did Atomic Blonde.
Yeah, Atomic Blonde, which had great fight scenes, but nothing else.
Yeah, I'm not really sure where this guy is going.
Yeah,
I'm not.
I hated both Deadpool movies. I hated both of them. I have no patience for the shtick. Like, as soon as he starts, you know, mouthing off and breaking the fourth wall, I'm like, I can't. I mean, I felt that way about the first Deadpool, too. I just was like, the best part of Deadpool 2 is Brad Pitt's cameo.
Yeah.
That's the best part of the movie. But, yeah, I don't know. But, I mean, I love the John Wick movies, but he's not at the helm of those things anymore.
No, it's Chad Stahelski.
Right.
And he's seeing a lot better returns. That's all I'm going to say.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, those movies are great. All the John Wick movies are great. I still think the second one's the best. I love the third one. I thought the third one was fantastic.
Yeah.
And the first one, obviously, which was a movie that just came out of nowhere that nobody expected to take off. But that second one, the second John Wick movie, really catches fire. I mean, it's a terrific movie. But, yeah. So, anyway, the Hobbs and Nobbs movie is out there, as I like to call it. But now we're going to be talking about the best buddy cop movies of all time. One of the most popular and enduring genres in movies. And we've already got a bunch of people who are texting in. What are your favorites in the buddy cop genre? Let's see. 773 area code says, the Dennis Rodman breakout flick, Double Team. What? Was Van Damme in that one?
I'm gonna check up on. It's been a long time.
Am I wrong on that? I think Van Damme was in Double Team, and it's a terrible movie.
Yeah.
Was it Van Damme?
Yep. The muscles from Brussels.
Right.
And apparently Mickey Rourke was the bad guy.
Yeah, he was the bad guy.
Yeah.
It was an awful movie. Awful movie. 301 says, one of my favorite buddy cop movies is Running Scared with Billy Crystal and the late Gregory Hines. Very entertaining movie, shot right here in Chicago, featuring a really great chase scene where they're on the L tracks. Peter Hines directed that movie, the director of Capricorn 1, which is one of the greatest movies ever. 773 area code Tango and Cash. I love that movie. Certifiably insane movie. Completely insane movie.
That's Stallone and
Kurt Russell.
Yeah,
you can't. I mean, Kurt Russell's in it. It's good. That's how it works. Andrei Konchalovsky directed that movie. The Madman. A Madman. Directed Runaway Train and Shy People. He did so many great movies. But that movie's nuts. First time I remember seeing Terry Hatcher was in that movie.
Would have been pretty early.
She was in that, and then like a couple of years later, she did Soap Dish, which is one of the funniest. Yeah, have you ever seen Soap Dish?
I don't think so.
Oh man,
Soap Dish!
You got to see Soap Dish. It is spectacularly funny, like really great and funny with an unbelievable cast, and it's about the inner workings of a soap opera.
Oh wow! Look at that. So
the cast is insane.
I'm seeing Sally Field.
Kevin Kline, Robert Downey Jr., Whoopi Goldberg.
Oh wow, I'm in just for Kevin Kline. Honestly,
Kevin Kline is unbelievably funny in it. Unbelievably funny. Everybody is. Sally Field is ridiculously funny.
Mm.
And Gary Marshall has a small role.
Love it.
Has a small role.
Love
in it. It was written by Andrew Bergman. So I mean, obviously, we've talked about the kind of stuff that guy does. It is laugh out loud funny. I mean, seriously, I could watch that movie. Kathy Moriarty is in it. Geez, I'm trying to remember who else. There's a ton. I mean, it's just like the cast is just from top to bottom. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, hit after hit after hit.
Yeah.
Elizabeth Shue.
Yep. Elizabeth Shue plays the long-lost daughter of Sally Field. and the idea is that the movie, you know, about the making of a soap opera becomes a soap opera, like, while you're watching it. It is absolutely hilarious. Like, really ridiculously funny. So, 773 code, in addition to Tango and Cash, also chooses Stop or My Mom Will Shoot. Why would you pick that movie?
Well, because it delivers on that single premise.
Stallone and Estelle Getty.
I'm sorry, is that not good enough for you?
It's a terrible movie.
But he does the one thing that I love when people do it in the movie. He says the title of the movie.
Turner and Hooch. So I guess the dog counts as a buddy?
He's a canine officer. That's his buddy cop.
I've told this story before, right, about when Roy was on vacation the week that Turner and Hooch came out. Roy Leonard, by the way.
Yeah.
Roy Leonard was on vacation the week that Turner and Hooch came out, so Kathy O'Malley was filling in, and we reviewed the movies every Saturday. Roy and I reviewed the movies every Saturday morning at 9:30 on his show. And so... the week that Turner and Hooch was released, Kathy was sitting in. And so I go down to the station to do my segment at 9:30 and review the movies. And Kathy goes, this is the day after the movie opened. The movie opened on Friday, and this is Saturday morning at 9:30. So she goes, yeah, you know, I thought it was really good, but I couldn't believe that they killed off the dog. This is like literally 12 hours after the movie had opened, like 12, 18 hours after the movie had opened. And I go, Kathy, no, you can't. And then the phone lines lit up. She made everyone angry. I'll never forget it. Because she just goes,
I feel bad.
She just blurts out and says, yeah, I can't believe they killed off the dog. I'm like, no, you can't say that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Three quarters of the population haven't even gone out to see the movie yet.
And the other quarter doesn't even know it exists.
Oh, they were so angry. People were so angry.
Over Turner and Hooch.
Yeah.
That's surprising to me.
Well, I mean, you know, it doesn't matter what the movie is. You don't want to give that away.
Yeah, that's true.
You know what I mean? Like, I mean,
I will say there are certain movies that if someone told me what the basic idea of what happens in Hobbs and Shaw, I'd be like, all right, I'm probably still going to see it.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know. Does it shock you that the movie's ridiculous? Like my dad said, there's no logic whatsoever to it. No, because every Fast and Furious movie just gets more ridiculous as they go.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look, all you gotta do is look at the trailer for the Hobbs and Hobbs movie. It just, and Idris Elba's like a robot in it? I don't even... By the way, they re-ran the Idris Elba SNL.
Oh, yeah.
Saturday, because I went up to my room and... I actually, you know, went up to my room and just chilled because, like, all of Saturday was insane at the fest because that's the longest day.
Oh yeah,
and so I just went up to my room and as I always do when I check into the hotel, whenever I check into the hotel, the first thing I do is I crank the air conditioning down to about 50.
Ooh.
So I walk into the room. It's freezing. I'm so happy. I just climbed under the big covers, and I watched SNL. And it was that. And I had forgotten that it was a pretty solid episode.
Yeah, he did a good job.
Yeah.
He did a good one.
Well, he's Idris Elba, man.
Yeah.
He's Stringer Bell. Stringer Bell,
he's
man.
He's Luther.
He's Stringer Bell, man. He'll always be Stringer Bell. So, anyway. For a long time, I didn't know the guy was British.
He kills the accent.
I mean, The Wire. I mean, yeah. I was like, and then when I saw him on a talk show, and I was like, this guy's British? I had no idea Stringer Bell was a Brit. You know how many Brits were in The Wire?
A shocking number.
Unbelievable. McNulty is a Brit. Like, I was like, what the hell? I mean, it was like a lot of British actors and actresses in The Wire that I had no idea they were British. So, The Wire, greatest TV show of all time. Just saying. Mm-hmm. All right, let's take a break. We'll get back into this. The best cop buddy movies of all time. There are so many of them. The first one that pops into my head, I'll tell you what it is when we get back. But I think the very quintessential one that always pops into my head. And we'll talk about that coming up. When the rain is blowing in your face, and the whole world is on your case, I would offer you a warm embrace to make you feel my
all right.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5. I'm your overnight dude every weekday morning, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. It's Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday. You mean 2 for Tuesday? Wrapping up the Kelly Clarkson 2 for there. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200 for talk, text, and 2 for Tuesday requests. We are talking about the best buddy cop movies of all time. Chris from Midway says, here's a useless Kelly Clarkson fact. Reba McEntire is her mother-in-law. No, I did not know that. How about this one? Lethal 847 says Lethal Weapon for a buddy cop movie. I'm not a fan of any of those movies.
I love all of them.
I don't like any of them.
That's too bad.
Yeah, I think they all suck. 708 area code says Busting with Robert Blake and Elliot Gould. Wow, I haven't seen that movie in years. A long time since I saw that one. 630 area code says, what about local boy Robert Zadar in Tango and Cash? You mean maniac cop? Robert Zadar?
Bobby Zadar.
Yeah. He's got a face, that guy.
Mm-hmm. Bless him.
All right. Much like the romantic comedy, the buddy cop film follows a familiar emotional trajectory. I can't stand you. I hate that I have to be around you. Maybe you're not so bad. We are actually have a lot in common. You know what? Deep down, maybe we're not so different. Wow, I think I love you. Sure, that last line isn't actually spoken in many buddy cop movies, but it's implied. So Hobbs and Shaw is a subgenre that's out right now. It says Midnight Run sometimes shows up on lists like this, but only Robert De Niro's character is a cop, so we're not including it. Are you out of your mind? It's like one of the best cop buddy movies of all time, Midnight Run.
Yeah, I think you can squeak the rules for that one.
Of course you can, because it's Midnight Run.
Yeah, it's like kind of one of the prototypical
Midnight
cop
Run
movies.
Is one, and I've talked about this on the air before. It's a remote dropper for me. Absolutely. Whenever, any time Midnight Run is on, I will watch it. I don't care how far into the movie it is, you know, what part of the movie it is. I don't care. Anytime Midnight Run is on, I watch it. I love that movie. One of the most entertaining movies, and De Niro and Grodin are unbelievable in it. They are unbelievable in it. So here's what they got. They got Tango and Cash. You're including your Tango and Cash. It says, oh, come on, like we're not going to start the list with this. The Uber Buddy Cop movie, the platonic ideal of a mediocre buddy cop flick that really isn't anything but a buddy cop movie. A movie so short on imagination that they went ahead and made them the names of the two cops that you'd never heard of before the name of the movie. Tango and Cash, the movie that had a famously chaotic set. Several directors and producers were fired during the filming. One crew member said, from the first day we started, no one knew what the hell anyone was doing. And while it shows from the very first frame, we're not immune to the charms of an extremely dumb movie whose primary innovation is putting Sylvester Stallone in glasses. It wasn't the only way to differentiate him from mullet-sporting Kurt Russell, but it was the quickest. The two actors appear to be in two different movies in a way that's oddly not unpleasant. It was the very last studio movie released in the 80s. That's a fun fact about Tango and Cash. Running Scared, which we mentioned already. Not the 2006 Paul Walker movie. This is a Peter Hyams action comedy about two tough Chicago cops who want to retire to Florida until they finish up, but all they have one last job. Gregory Hines and Billy Crystal, an unlikely set of police officers, but Running Scared goes a long way on their unlikely chemistry, which is all you can really ask from a buddy cop movie. Credit for having Dan Hedaya play their frustrated captain, a role he should have played at least 100 times in his career. Dan Hedaya, what a fantastic actor that guy is. You ever see the movie Dick?
Yeah, I think...
Kristen Stewart, not Kristen Stewart, Kristen... What's her name?
Spider-Man.
Kristen, from the Interview with the Vampire. Wow. And Michelle Williams are in it. And it's about Watergate. Why am I blanking on her name?
Kristen Dunst.
That's it.
Kristen Dunst.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's the movie where Will Ferrell and play Woodward and Bernstein. Will Ferrell and is it Parnell? No.
I don't think it's Parnell.
I know Will Ferrell is but that movie is great.
I think it's actually going to be playing at the Music Box soon, if I'm not mistaken.
Is it?
Yeah.
I love that movie. It's very, very funny. About five people have seen it. It's a very funny movie. Here's another terrible movie, The Last Boy Scout. My God.
You're not a big fan of Shane Black's 80s work.
No, not at all. No. I like him now. I liked I liked the Iron Man movie. I liked Kiss Kiss Bad Bang Bang.
The Nice Guys.
I love The Nice Guys. And the last one, The Predator. I like The Predator.
Yeah, him and Fred Decker.
Yeah, Fred Decker. Well, he came off as kind of a jerk.
He was smarmy, which
very smarmy,
which didn't surprise me in terms of like, yeah, if you're working with Shane Black on a pretty regular basis, and those are your biggest hits.
Yeah.
It's probably because you have a very similar sense of humor, because Shane Black has a very similar personality.
Yeah. See, The Last Boy Scout feels like an inflection point. Here's what I remember about The Last Boy Scout, because I hated it. I just absolutely hated it. But I did love the opening scene where the dude, the football player, pulls the gun out and just starts shooting guys on the field. I thought that was insane. And I was like, okay, that's cool. But who's it? Damon Wayans, right?
Last Boy Scout?
Yeah, right? It's Damon Wayans. It's Bruce Willis and Damon Wayans, right?
Let me check.
Because Damon Wayans comes riding out on a horse at the end. I remember just going, what am I watching here?
Well, Last Boy Scout, it is Damon Wayans. It's not one that I've...
Tony Scott directed that movie, right?
Yeah. Which, I mean, Tony Scott to me is kind of uneven. Like, I don't love
Tony... best.
Yeah.
At best.
Well, I know that you don't like... I get a kick out of Top Gun. It's not my favorite movie, but I'm a true romance guy through and through. I think that's a great movie.
Yeah, no. I think... I wish Tarantino had directed it. I think it would have been a much better movie had he directed it.
Yeah.
But he was a big fan. Tarantino was a big fan of Tony Scott's.
Yeah.
He loved Tony Scott.
I think he liked the style that he brought, but like... His style was very of its time. It was very, like, 80s. Tony Scott was a guy that shot
movies like it
was the 80s.
Oh, yeah. Beverly Hills Cop 2 is one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my life. He directed that.
I did like Man on Fire in 2004.
Yeah, it was all right.
I thought that was a pretty cool movie.
Yeah. I don't know. Well, he worked with Tony Scott like 12 times, Denzel.
Yeah, they were...
American Gangster was Ridley.
That was Ridley.
Okay. I get my Scotts mixed up every once in a while. here's Ike on WGN. Go ahead, Ike.
Hey, Nick, how's it going with you,
all
man?
Right.
Yeah, this is a very underrated buddy movie that I really enjoyed. It's with Dolph Lundgren and Brandon Lee, Showdown Little Tokyo.
Oh, God, I haven't seen that movie in years.
but it was a fun movie. It was good. It was good to see Brandon Lee do something besides The Crow. This was before The Crow, but I didn't know he did it until after The Crow came out, and him teaming up with Dolph Lundgren, they were a pretty good team.
Yeah, I haven't seen it since it came out. I do remember it. All right, Ike, thanks, man.
No problem.
Okay, we got to take a break here. We got the news coming up, and then we're talking about buddy cop movies in honor of Hobbs and Shaw, which is in theaters now. And my parents didn't like it. All right, we'll take a break. The news is up after this.
Don't come around here no more.
Right, welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here on a Tuesday morning. Yeah, man, two for Tuesday. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Tom, who requested the Tom Petty?
That's coming to us from Ike.
Ike. All right, there you go. We are talking about buddy cop movies, you know, that famous genre. This Hobbs and Shaw movie that's out right now falls under that blanket, that category. So we're talking about some of our favorites from that era of the buddy cop movies, which is always going to be popular. 412 area code says, how about 21 Jump Street? I was very surprised at how funny that movie was because I thought it was going to be terrible. I remember seeing the trailers for it, you know, some movie based on 21 Jump Street. Are you kidding me? But it was actually very funny. And I liked the second one, too. I thought both of them were funny.
Very clever.
331 area code says, my favorite funny cop movie is Dragnet with Dan Aykroyd and Tom Hanks. Hilarious movie. Hilarious. And Dabney Coleman, they say Dabney Coleman was also in the movie, and he's hilarious. Dabney Coleman is always funny. He's always funny. He's hilarious in Dragnet. That was a real surprising movie. I had no idea it was going to be that funny. But, yeah, I love that movie. 773 area code, Training Day with Denzel and Ethan Hawke. One of the really buddies.
Yeah. But it is about two cops.
It is. It's a great movie, too.
Yeah. It's tough to watch at times.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah. No, well, I mean, you know, Denzel, I mean, he won the Academy Award for it, and he deserved it. He was incredible in that movie. Terry says Walter Matthau and Jerry Stiller. Come on. Walter Matthau and Jerry Stiller in Taking of Pelham 1-2-3. There's another Tony Scott movie right there, the remake,
mm-hmm.
which is awful. Awful.
Isn't Denzel's
in that,
one,
that too. Yeah, it's
Denzel.
It's a terrible movie. But the original is awesome.
Yeah.
The original Taking of Pelham 1-2-3. Come on, man. Robert Shaw. Come on.
It's about as tense as they come.
Oh. It's a great movie with a fantastic ending. Fantastic. I love that movie. Matthau was amazing in it. And the soundtrack, please. All right, somebody mentioned Turner and Hooch. Then what about we? How come everybody's talking about Turner and Hooch? Doesn't anybody remember K-9 with Jim Belushi?
Weren't there like four of those? There's
well, several. No. There are several. You mean K-9 movies?
Yeah. Jim.
That's a franchise. But that came out the same year as Turner and Hooch. They came out the same year.
Well, it's that thing where Hollywood always seems to make two movies,
right?
That are, like the
you had
same
your Armageddon
concept.
And your Deep Impact, yeah. Volcano and Dante's Peak. They came out right at the same time.
Yeah.
All right, Stakeout. This was like a big comeback movie for Richard Dreyfuss. Dreyfuss had kind of fallen off the map. Dreyfuss and Emilio Estevez. I think Stakeout's great. John Badham directed that movie. This is a movie about two male cops staking out the home of a woman, resulting in one of the cops falling in love with her. Feels a little creepy today and probably felt so then. Dreyfuss and Estevez have an amusing comedic friction, and the idea of casting the famously nervous and ranting Dreyfuss as a cop leads... to his fair share of laughs. Still, Stakeout is way, way too violent for no apparent reason. And there might have been one reason, a sequel, another Stakeout with the original duo and Rosie O'Donnell. It was PG-13, and then no one went to see it. It was terrible.
That sounds a little bit like Sharky's Machine, where he's doing the Stakeout.
Yeah. The thing about Stakeout, there's a moment in Stakeout. Have you seen Stakeout?
I think I caught it on cable one time. I remember Emilio Estevez and Richard Dreyfuss being in that movie, but I didn't really like it. Grab me.
There's a really funny moment in the movie that's very meta, where you know they're basically you know they're on a stakeout, so it's 24 hours and they're trying to kill time. So they're playing like movie trivia stuff, and they're throwing lines from movies at each other, and they have to guess what the movie is. And Emilio Estevez is saying, at one point, Emilio Estevez says, this was no boating accident. And Dreyfuss is like, what? He's like, this is no boating accident. And he goes, I have no idea what you're talking about. I've never.
Jeez. Come on. little bit more on the nose there, guys.
It was funny, man. Made me laugh.
That is pretty funny.
And he was doing the exact line reading that Dreyfus did in Jaws. And Dreyfus is like, I have no idea what, you're talking about. okay, next here that they list is Bad Boys, which is terrible.
You know, I resent that. I think Bad Boys 1 and 2 are fantastic.
Bad Boys 2 is one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my life. It is a movie that has absolutely nothing but contempt for its audience.
I was on a bus to Nashville in, I want to say, January. Yeah, this past January. And all I had was my laptop and a copy of Bad Boys 2. So I watched it like three times on the way down.
Well, it's almost 3 hours long, too.
I know. It's the whole thing.
Truly... I mean, I hate that movie. I hate every frame of that movie with every fiber of my being.
You don't love those Michael Bay like kind of whip pans?
No.
Or just all around.
Where the camera spins around them and they stand up.
Stuff just got real.
Yeah. So that's garbage.
I love it.
It's terrible. Bad Boys isn't as bad as Bad Boys 2, but it's not good.
Yeah, but the problem is that Bad Boys 1 has Tia Leone in it, and she is just insufferable.
Oh, I disagree. I like Tia Leone. Did you see Flirting with Disaster? The David O. Russell movie?
No.
Oh, man, you got to see that movie.
Well, I'll give it this. Tia Leone does not belong in a Michael Bay.
I don't think anybody belongs in a Michael Bay movie. That's just my thought. Nobody belongs in a Michael Bay movie.
John Turturro seemed to like it just fine. In the
what is he? Oh, he's in the Transformers.
The Transformers,
right? Yeah, okay, he's in the Transformers.
But those paychecks are probably paying the new spinoff from The Big Lebowski.
Yeah, so Bad Boys, that's, of course, with Martin Lawrence and Will Smith. Both of those movies suck, but the second one is just, I mean, please. How about this, The Heat? I actually think this movie is very funny. It's Bridesmaids director Paul Feig reunited with Oscar-nominated actress Melissa McCarthy, who went from scene stealer to movie star for this less-than-great follow-up. The Heat boasts the considerable chemistry between McCarthy's uncouth Boston cop Mullins and Sandra Bullock's stiff FBI agent Ashburn. But the script's action movie spoofs tend to be pretty... they leave the actresses to the will of the movie. Feig and McCarthy could have more luck sending up another musty genre, the James Bond thriller, with 2015's uproarious Spy. But here they never quite transcend the buddy cop conventions. I totally disagree. I thought The Heat was a very funny movie.
I like the interrogation scene. I thought that was pretty good.
I thought they were great together. I thought both of them were very funny.
Well, now I couldn't even watch that movie without thinking, like, what is Sookie doing?
Yeah.
She can't hurt that man.
You know, they're talking about Spy. The best part of Spy is Jason Statham. He's the best part of that movie. He's hilarious.
He's great.
I've never been a massive Jason Statham fan because, like, you know, I can't stand the Guy Ritchie movies. I can't stand them.
You're breaking my heart, man.
He sucks. He's a terrible director. Terrible. And he just directed the damn Aladdin movie.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I mean, did you like the Transporter movies? Those?
No.
I
guess the first one was fine. I don't know.
They scratched a particular itch, you know?
Yeah.
I was just like, yeah, do I want to see Jason Statham just shooting people and driving? Sure.
But Spy, I was really surprised at just how funny he was in it.
Yeah, he's fun. He's a fun guy.
Well, now he's Hobbs and Nobbs. Which one is he? Is he Hobbs
or
Nobbs?
He's Deckard Shaw.
Okay.
And he's, he's the one of the best parts of the latter half of that series. As a villain and turned like anti-hero, he's really fun to watch.
I just remember, you know, those Fast and Furious movies always have like a postscript after the credits.
Uh-huh.
And I remember, I don't remember which one it was because they all, like I said, they all kind of meld together. But in the postscript, when Jason Statham shows up, gets out of the car and shows up, the audience I saw it with booed.
What, after he kills...
I don't remember. All I know is that he gets out of the car. Like it's setting up that he's going to be in the sequel. The audience that I saw that movie with booed.
That's depressing, because I remember, because that's... Because they tie it back, because really, Fast and the Furious, it's got such a weird timeline.
I don't even know.
I'm pretty sure 4 through 6 all take place before the third one.
I don't even.
It's really. Weird.
I have no idea which ones are which.
I cheered. I was like, nice. Here we go.
I don't know. As soon as he showed up, and I was like, oh god. I guess that makes sense. I don't know. I have no idea what's going on with those movies. And then Kurt Russell shows up.
Yeah.
He's great in it. Like one or two of them, right? Isn't he in a couple of them?
Yeah, he plays Mr.
He's a cop,
Nobody.
Right? Isn't he a cop?
Sort of. Like he's like part of like some shadow government organization.
I don't know.
He's great though. He's
great in everything. Kurt Russell, you know? Here's Glenn on WGN. Hey, Glenn.
Hey, morning, Nick. How you doing?
All right, what's up?
The Red Heat. And I only saw it the one time. I'm not sure what you think of it.
Yeah.
I can't remember anything about the movie except the first beginning with the fight scene.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I remember not liking it. It was shot here. It was shot here in Chicago. Arnold Schwarzenegger and Jim Belushi. And it was directed by, very disappointingly, it's directed by Walter Hill, who's one of my favorite directors. But no. Yeah.
Well, like I said, the only thing I can remember about is the fight scene.
Yeah.
Which was a pretty good fight scene,
It was a fight scene like in a steam room or something, right?
Then they broke out into the snow.
I guess that's the only thing I remember about it. All right, Glenn, thanks, man.
Right.
Take care.
You're welcome. Have a nice morning.
Okay.
Bye.
Yeah, I was disappointed on so many levels because of Red Heat. It's Walter Hill, who's one of my favorite directors of all time. But Jim Belushi, come on, man.
Yeah.
All right. Another set of movies I'm not a big fan of, Rush Hour. It's mostly because of Chris Tucker, because I can't stand Chris Tucker. The only time I ever liked him was in Jackie Brown. Come on, man. I'm home. I'm high. Because Chris Tucker, I swear, I have very little patience for that guy. Can you understand the words that are coming to my mouth?
I like him.
Shut up.
I like him a lot.
God, I can't. Why?
I don't know. You have to give me this. Give me this. Rush Hour, those movies came out when I was the prime age to be like watching PG-13.
Yeah.
Sort of stuff. I was like 9 or 10. And I was like, man, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. Jackie Chan and some crazy guy who's just screaming all the time, saying weird stuff.
The thing is, I was, you know, by the time Rush Hour came out, I had been about 10 years deep into the Jackie Chan stuff. Like, I started watching Jackie Chan movies long before Rumble in the Bronx came out, long before he became, you know, big in America. Like, I was watching his Hong Kong stuff for years. So by the time Rush Hour came out, I was like, okay, this is an attempt to do a good Jackie Chan movie, but it's not good. It's not good.
Yeah, I have a certain level of, I guess you would call it nostalgia for those movies, because that was my gateway drug. Because I never would have watched Rumble in the Bronx, and then I wouldn't have gone back further and watched Police Story 1 and 2 and all the other crazy stuff he was doing in Hong Kong if I never saw Rush Hour.
I guess that's true. You know who turned me on to, I've told you this, right? You know who turned me on to Jackie Chan? Dave Kerr.
Yeah, yeah.
Dave Kerr, the best film critic in the country, and he used to be here in Chicago, and it was after a screening of Above the Law, the first Seagal movie. And after the screening, we're standing by the elevator waiting to go, and I was like, wow, that was really great. And he just looks at me and he goes, what? I said, that was really great. He kicks some ass. He's like, I have two words for you, Hong Kong. And then the next day, the next screening, he brought like six movies in, including like Eastern Condors and all of these great, with Sammo Hung and all the other guys.
Yeah.
And I watched it and blew my mind. Blew my mind.
Sure. Yeah.
And I'd never seen anything like it. I would go down to Argyle Street. Mm-hmm. Right, not far from where you live.
Yeah, yeah.
And I would go in and rent Cantonese movies. And
I think you still can, really, to this day. I think
you can go in there, you can get an octopus, you can get a live octopus, and you can rent some Jackie Chan. That's what you can do.
That's your date night.
That's it. All right, let's take a quick break. We're talking about buddy cop movies. Which ones are your favorites? It's a great genre. There you go. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline studio here. And it's a Tuesday, two for Tuesday. Yeah, man, two for Tuesday. Wrapping up the Tom Petty twofer right there. And we got more to come. 312-981-7200 So in honor of this Hobbs and Shaw movie that's out, we're talking about cop buddy cop movies. What are your bests? 312-981-7200. This is a list that was put together by Vulture.com. And they include The Guard, which is you very rarely see this movie mentioned. It's a really good movie. But the pleasures are modest but dependably consistent in this smart, low-key crime comedy in which a racist small-town Irish cop played by the great Brendan Gleeson is forced to work with a black FBI agent played by Don Cheadle to hunt down some drug dealers. Writer-director John Michael McDonough, who made Calvary, which is a great movie, too, has a knack for funny dialogue, precise character portraits, and off-kilter rhythms. Where other films on this list mock buddy cop tropes, The Guard treats them as a launchpad for a screwy narrative that flirts with the thriller and even the Western. Both leads are superbly deadpan, letting each wry joke and tense exchange hang in the air for maximum impact. Yeah, it's a really good movie that about seven people saw. Brendan Gleeson, man, I love that guy.
I don't think I've ever seen him in a movie I didn't like, or at least didn't like him in.
Oh, I've never disliked him. He's been in some crappy movies, but I've never disliked him. But I remember the first time I saw him in Bruges, man. God,
it's so good.
I just lost my mind. My ex-wife and I saw that movie, and we were like, when it was over, I just wanted to start again.
Mm-hmm.
They're both so good in that movie.
Yeah.
Colin Farrell and him. It's such a great movie.
And I still to this day consider a bottle a deadly weapon.
Yeah. And you know who's great? Who else is great in it? Ralph Fiennes is unbelievable. Hilarious. Inanimate Object.
Harry, it's an inanimate
object. My God. I just, I love McDonough, man. I just, because I love three Billboards.
Mm-hmm.
Seven Psychopaths. I mean, I'm a fan of this guy. He's a playwright too.
An incredibly unique voice.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways.
End of Watch, one of the 47,000 David Ayer cop movies,
and one of the only ones I actually enjoy.
I like End of Watch.
I think it's great.
I liked it. Michael Pena. I always liked Michael Pena. I like him in everything. I've liked him ever since Felicity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I loved him on Felicity. And Jake Gyllenhaal is one of Jake Gyllenhaal's best performers. You know, he's a really underrated actor. I don't think people realize. I don't think people acknowledge just how good Jake Gyllenhaal is. Now he got a lot of deserved praise and press for Nightcrawler because he was incredible in that movie. But I think he's great in everything.
Yeah, I think sometimes people forget that he was in Brokeback Mountain.
Yeah, both of them were great in that movie. And there we go. The Nice Guys. God, I love that movie. It's so entertaining. It's just so entertaining. Ryan Gosling. There's a scene in that movie. This is Russell Crowe and Ryan Gosling. And again, Shane Black. There are so many funny moments in that. I mean, I'm telling you, I laughed my ass off that entire movie. I thought The Nice Guys was fantastic. I think it's one of my favorite. It might be my favorite Shane Black movie. I think it is my favorite Shane Black movie.
Yeah, it's incredible.
But Gosling does a thing in the movie where they're at a Hollywood party, and he ends up like falling down a hill and falls into a dead body. He discovers a dead body, and he's in the middle of the woods. He falls down this hill. He's in the middle of the woods, and he's full on doing Lou Costello. He's full on doing an imitation of Lou. It's a total tribute to Lou Costello because
the shaking thing where he's like
he can't say his friend's name because it's like in Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein.
Yeah,
like when he sees like the Frankenstein monster and he can't say his name. Gosling does that, and I know it was a purpose. And the choice was on purpose.
Totally. There's the bit where do you remember when they go up in the elevator? The doors open and then they see people getting shot. Yeah. Immediately close it, and as the elevator goes down, a body flies out.
Right.
Gosling makes this horrified face, and he's like twitching in fear. And I don't think I've ever seen him act better. It was so good.
They're both great in that movie. They're both really, really great. And I'm trying to remember. I don't know. I haven't seen the movie in a while. I have to see. That movie again. I haven't seen The Nice Guys in a while. It's been a while. I should bust that one out. I haven't seen it in a while. But that's a really funny movie. And they're terrific in it. They've got great chemistry. And I'm not the biggest Russell Crowe guy in the world.
Me neither.
But I think he's great in that. I think he's really, really great in The Nice Guys. But I'm a huge Ryan Gosling fan. I just think he's great in everything. And he's just so... the thing I love about Ryan Gosling, I love when he hosts Saturday Night Live because he's on the verge of breaking the entire time. You can tell when he hosts Saturday Night Live, you can tell he's having a great time. And of course, you know, the whole legendary now, the whole alien abduction thing where Kate McKinnon is talking. They're taking, like, Cecily Strong and Ryan Gosling are talking about what a wonderful experience it was. You know, they were
pulled into a beam
of light. Yeah. It was love. And then Kate McKinnon is doing the whole thing, and Gosling's gone. If you remember, Gosling's just losing it. And then the second time they did it, when he hosted again, they put him. They made the mistake of putting him next to her because he was on the end in the first time. But the second time, so she makes Ryan Gosling get up and she starts playing with his butt. And Gosling is, you could see him shaking. His back is to the, you know, his back is to the camera, but she's like messing with his butt and squeezing his cheeks and stuff. And you could see like his whole body is convulsing. It's fantastic. But anyway, I love Ryan. I love Ryan Gosling.
Great dude.
He's amazing. Okay. Let us take a quick break here for the news, and then we'll come back. More buddy cop movies talking about here at 312-981-7200. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It's Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. Who requested the suite?
That's coming to us from Steve.
Steve.
Little Willie.
There you go. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here. By the way, I was off on Friday and on Monday, but we will return to Vic's picks. Vic, you ready to dive back in on this Friday?
Yeah, man, let's do it.
Okay, we'll do a double dose of it on Friday then, at some point on Friday. So there you go. All right, let's see. We're talking buddy cop movies right here because the Hobbs and Shaw movie is out, and. To 708 area code says, you talked about Turner and Hooch and K-9, but what about Top Dog with Chuck Norris? Oh, I totally forgot about Top Dog. How could I forget about Top Dog?
Is it spelled D-A-W-G? Or
no, just... it's Top Dog. It's regular dog. 773 area code, 25 years, 2019, Cops and Robbersons. What? Cops and Robbersons? It's a Chevy Chase movie. Who's his buddy in that? I don't even remember. I just remember the movie being terrible.
It is Jack Palance.
Oh, right. Jack Palance. That's right. A terrible movie. Cops and Robbersons. How about Certain Fury with Tatum O'Neill and Irene Cara? What? I believe Certain Fury with Tatum O'Neill and Irene Cara, if I'm not mistaken, straight to video. 773 area code, Super Troopers. How is Super Troopers a buddy cop movie?
I mean, it's about buddies and they're cops, but it is not a buddy cop movie.
No.
And I love Super Troopers, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, I like Super Troopers. The second one wasn't good, but I liked I liked the first one. 847 area code. This is the one that I always think of immediately. Because to me it's like the quintessential buddy cop movie. That's 48 Hours with Nick Nolte and Eddie Murphy. I love that movie. I love everything about that movie. I remember the first time I saw 48 Hours and the scene where Eddie Murphy, where Nick Nolte gives Eddie Murphy his badge and Eddie Murphy goes in to pretend to be a cop in the redneck bar. I remember as soon as that scene was over, there's a new sheriff in town. His name is Reggie Hammond. I remember leaning over to my girlfriend at the time as soon as that scene was over, and I was like, Eddie Murphy just became a star. That's it. It's one of those scenes where it's like, that's it. It's you are now a star. You know, I mean, everybody knew him just from Saturday Night Live. It was his first movie. And as soon as that scene was over, I was like, wow, okay. And I love that movie. And I mean, I think he and Nolte are great in it. James Remar as the psycho villain. David Patrick Kelly, all the guys, those two guys, both from the Warriors. Frank McRae as the boss, screaming. Yeah, no, I love that. I really, really love that movie. I hated the sequel. Oh, my God.
Another 48 hours?
So bad.
Was that, did Walter Hill return?
Yeah. Yeah, Walter Hill directed it. And they made Brian, God, why am I blanking on his name? Brian James? Brian James, who was Leon. He was Leon in Blade Runner. He was like, he's a cop in Brian James. He's a cop. He passed away. Brian James passed away, which is really too bad because he was an amazing dude. He died too young. But he's amazing in Blade Runner. I think he's outstanding in Blade Runner. But he was one of the cops in 48 Hours. He worked in the office with Nolte. And in another 48 Hours, they made him the bad guy. Like, he was like an evil dude in it. And I was like, I remember watching it going, what are you doing? That first one is, that first movie is just fantastic.
It's a classic.
It's just great. All right, next on this list, Hot Fuzz, legendary.
Oh my God, do I love this movie.
I saw it 3 times in 2 days. Because I interviewed Simon Pegg, Nick Frost, and Edgar Wright. They were in town, so I went down and I interviewed them. So they had 2 back-to-back screenings at the screening room, and I stayed for both of them. And then the next night they were in town.
Mm-hmm.
And so I interviewed him in the afternoon, and then we went to the screening. My ex and I went to the screening at night. So I saw it 3 times in 2 days.
Jeez.
I love it. I love it. I think it might be my favorite of the Cornetto trilogy.
It is mine by a country mile. And and I love the other two, but Hot Fuzz is just so...
Shaun of the Dead has a real soft spot in my heart and always will.
Sure, yeah.
But, I mean, I think Hot Fuzz is probably the best of the three. And I love The World's End. And I always have a great connection to that, to The World's End, because I saw that movie the day that I got this gig. Like, everybody was in the office, and, you know, they pulled me into the office and I said, we want you to do full-time overnights. And I was like, oh, that's awesome. Thank you very much. I was very thrilled. And then I went to go see The World's End. So I always have like a great,
nice memory.
Angel is a hypervigilant London cop who lives his life like he's in a Jerry Bruckheimer movie. Butterman, played by Nick Frost, is a slow-witted small-town cop who'd rather watch Bruckheimer movies than get involved in actual car chases or shootouts. In Hot Fuzz, they become unlikely partners when Angel gets reassigned to Butterman's sleepy burb. And much of the fun of director Edgar Wright's Shaun of the Dead follow-up is watching these two actors play polar opposite policemen. In typical Wright fashion, Hot Fuzz is a send-up of the genre that doubles as an over-the-top example of said genre, which gives the suspense and action an extra layer of meta-cheekiness. Probably not surprisingly, then, the film doesn't quite reach the heights of the movies it's spoofing or celebrating, but who would complain when you're spending 2 hours with Peg and Frost, endlessly enjoyable company?
And Timothy Dalton just
fantastic,
going for it at every turn.
Fantastic. Yeah. I mean, the cameos in that movie are fantastic, too. Steve Coogan. Or Great Big Bushy Beard. Why am I blanking on his name? From it's Harry Potter movies and all that. I can't remember. So it's a great, great big bushy beard.
This calls for something much more serious.
Yeah.
Do you like ice cream?
Yeah.
I love the Andes. The Andes are my favorite.
Oh, the Andes.
Because talking to them is like an uphill battle, isn't it, Dad?
Yeah. All right, next year, The Rock. How is The Rock a buddy cop movie? How is that a buddy cop movie? This early Michael Bay hit came back when Nicolas Cage was making his transition from Leaving Las Vegas award-winning actor to gonzo action star. So what I mean is, do they consider Sean Connery to be his buddy? Is that what they...
I think so.
Is that what they... Seriously?
That must be what they're going for, which kind of seems unfair that then they would leave out Midnight Run.
Well, of course.
Because if The Rock is a buddy cop movie, then Midnight Run is definitely a buddy cop movie.
Well, I guess because they're both cops, because FBI, you know, Sean Connery.
That's true.
No, he's not a cop. Wait, no, Sean Connery's not a cop.
He's Captain John Patrick Mason. It's been a while since I've seen this.
Oh, I haven't seen
The Rock in
a
long time.
It's been a very long time.
But I think they're both law enforcement.
Okay.
But one of them is retired.
All right. Super cop.
Meet the cop that can't be stopped.
So is that Michelle Yeoh? Is that
that's Jackie Chan and
No, I know, but are they they're partners in that?
Yeah.
They're buddies in that?
Yeah. In Hong Kong it's Police Story 3.
Right. Right. Okay. We get to Kiss Kiss Bang Bang here. Shane Black is the king of the buddy cop flick, so it wasn't shocking that he made his directorial debut with this. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, he had found an interesting wrinkle, casting a pre-Iron Man Robert Downey Jr. as Harry, a two-bit East Coast thief who screws up a burglary, runs from the cops, and stumbles into an acting audition, where he unexpectedly lands the role of a detective. Soon, Harry is sent to L.A. to shadow an actual cop, Perry, played by Val Kilmer, so he can learn the ropes. Black's patented guy's guy humor and inventive action sequences are given an extra juice by Downey and Kilmer's smart-ass chemistry. Special mention to Michelle Monaghan as Harry's childhood crush who ends up back in his life. She's as sharp and fun as her male cohorts. So, yeah, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. That was a movie that, I mean, everybody talks about how in 2008 was the big year for Robert Downey Jr. And it was, because in 2008 Iron Man came out, which not only, you know, like revitalized his career, but was the beginning of the Marvel Universe. But he also had a Tropic Thunder that came out the same year, and he got an Oscar nomination for Tropic Thunder. So it was this big year for him, 2008. But Kiss Kiss Bang Bang came out like 3 years earlier, and I sort of maintain that that's the movie that got the whole ball rolling. Like the whole, you know, having that rough period of time, you know, with the substance abuse and all the terrible things that was happening in his life. I think he got back on track and the ball started rolling with Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. And then obviously the whole thing blew up in 2008 with Iron Man and Tropic Thunder. So, but yeah, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, if you've not seen it, it's a great example of the buddy cop movie. And they are, both of them, Val Kilmer and Robert Downey Jr. are just fantastic in it. I mean, the chemistry between the two of them is just, it's great. So, all right, why don't we take a quick break here on WGN, and we'll come back and talk more about buddy cop movies. And if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m., 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. every weekday morning. And if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200 for talk and text and 2 for Tuesday requests. You have a 2 for Tuesday? Get your requests in now, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. In honor of the release of the Hobbs and Shaw motion picture experience, which my parents did not enjoy, we are talking about the best buddy cop movies. And we've been going through this list that they put together over at Vulture.com. And we're also going to talk about best spin-off movies and worst spin-off movies, because that's also what Hobbs and Nobbs is. It's a spin-off of the old Fast and Furious franchise. So that's what we're talking about. We would love to hear from you at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. All right, let's see. Next one on the list is my favorite Will Ferrell movie, The Other Guys, with Will Ferrell and Mark Wahlberg. I think it's the funniest movie that Will Ferrell's ever made. And I love that movie. I absolutely love it, and I think Mark Wahlberg is genius funny in it. That's the slow burn stuff that he does. It just kills me in that movie. And it also has one of the funniest moments ever in a movie when Dwayne Johnson and Samuel Jackson jump off the roof of that building. I with There Goes My Hero playing, and they just splat on the sidewalk. I remember the first time I saw it, I was laughing for like 5 minutes after that. It says, a few years before director Adam McKay won an Oscar for The Big Short, he took his crack at condemning Wall Street corruption and inequality on our financial system, but that's not why people remember the other guys. They're more likely to laugh at the memory of Will Ferrell and Mark Wahlberg playing mismatched cops whose routine investigation leads to a path of dark conspiracy. The Other Guys has never been embraced by the culture as much as the previous pairings, but with all due respect to Anchorman and Talladega Nights, this movie might just be as funny and quotable. It is as funny, if not funnier, than those movies. Talladega Nights, I think Talladega Nights is really good, but not great. Anchorman 2, I didn't like. Anchorman's obviously classic, but I still think The Other Guys is the funniest of all of them. And I think a lot of that has to do with Mark Wahlberg. I think Wahlberg is just hilarious. Absolutely hilarious in it. How about this? Miami Vice. You know, I was with that movie for about an hour. For about the first hour of it, I was with it. And then after a while, I was like, what the hell is happening?
It's had a weird reevaluation over the last couple of years. A lot of people have come out of the woodwork being like, yeah, no, Michael Mann's Miami Vice was dope. And I was like, I like it. I think I like it well enough, but you're right. Kind of falls apart plot-wise after the first hour.
It just becomes, I mean, you know, I don't know. I remember, you know, like really liking the whole beginning of the movie because it just drops you right in the middle of what's happening. There's like no setup or anything. It just drops you right in the middle of it. There are times when I really like Michael Mann. Sometimes I just can't stand him. Like, he'll make movies that I think are terrible. And then other times I'll look at his stuff and go, wow, you know?
Well, yeah. And he was a big pioneer of digital.
Yeah.
Collateral and then Miami Vice after it were both shot with some of the earliest high-tech digital cameras.
I'm a big fan of Collateral.
Collateral is awesome.
Collateral's a great movie.
Awesome.
And Cruise is great in it.
Although, I can't get behind the graying of his hair, the fake graying of his hair.
It didn't bother me.
His performance is spectacular, but every time I see him, I'm like, man, he doesn't even have gray hair now, and he's actually kind of old.
Well, he's 57.
He's a dinosaur.
But he's, I mean, you know, he's a maniac.
Yeah.
He's nuts. I love Tom Cruise. I think he's great. 816 area code says, to the Wayback Machine, 1974, the Super Cops. Super Cops, you know who's in that movie? Ron Liebman.
Really?
The great Ron Liebman. You ever hear of the show Kaz?
Oh, man. Don't do this. Don't do this. Right.
Oh, Kaz. 815 area code. The Other Guys gets mentioned here, and RIPD, which is a terrible movie.
Yeah, it's awful.
Despite the fact that Jeff Bridges is in it. It's a terrible... Who's the other? Is it Jude Law?
No, it's Ryan Reynolds.
Ryan Reynolds, that's right. What am I getting to Jude Law? What's the Jude Law?
He was in Repo Men.
Who's the other guy in Repo Men?
Oh, jeez. That's...
I just remember that being a terrible movie, too.
It was... Oh, Forrest Whitaker.
Oh, right.
But directed by Miguel Sapochnik, mm-hmm. who had become famous for directing big episodes of Game of Thrones.
Right. 847 area code, The Untouchables with Sean Connery and Kevin Costner. I guess they were buddies, right?
Yeah, and they are cops.
Yeah. 815 area code says, Lethal Weapon and Bad Boys. It says, thanks for helping with a wonderful flashback weekend. Oh, yes. Thank you for coming. 21 Jump Street has been mentioned already, but is also here. That was really, like I said before, that was a real surprise.
Yeah.
I mean, I had the lowest expectations in the world for that movie, and I ended up laughing a lot. And then the second one was funny, too. At that point, I'm trying to remember if I had reached my Jonah Hill breaking point. But I have a very, you know, I have a low threshold for all those guys. You know, like, I thought this, what the hell was the name of the end of the world movie? This is the end? Is that what that was?
Yeah, this is the end.
I had nothing.
Yeah, it didn't really
nothing.
Do anything for me.
And I can't stand Danny McBride. And I know a lot of people think he's funny. I don't understand how anybody can. The only thing I ever liked him in was the pot movie.
Oh.
The Pineapple Express.
Which, pot movie.
Yeah. Every Seth Rogen movie is a pot movie. But yeah. But that one is definitely a pot movie. But I thought that I thought he was pretty good in that. But I just don't like that end of the world movie. The only thing I liked about, I liked Michael Cera. That was the only thing that I liked.
Yeah, that was.
And I had no patience for that movie whatsoever. Well, actually, I did like Emma Watson going nuts.
Well, that was a fun
little
side. But
no,
I mean, I'm not going to watch every Jonah Hill movie. He's done plenty of movies that I really just don't think are very good, like War Dogs.
War Dogs was terrible. From the director of the Hangover trilogy, like that's supposed to get me into the theater. You know what I mean? I look at the ad and it says, from the director of the Hangover trilogy. Oh, well, in that case. That's why I don't know about this Joker thing. I swear to you, man. I have no idea.
It's getting a 70mm run.
I know it is. And I don't get it. And I'm just, you know, I've kind of, Joaquin, like I told, I mean, I can't stand that Taxi Driver ripoff that he did. I hated that movie. And it just seems like he's just going to do the Taxi Driver because Joker looks like it's the Taxi Driver.
Which, you know, it's kind of weird, the arc of Todd Phillips' career, because he made some really groundbreaking documentaries when he was in, like, college.
Well, yeah. And then, I mean, it was the frat boy thing that he did. But, yeah. Now, I don't know, man. I don't know. Yeah, War Dogs. Whew. That was a tough one to get through. Really tough. Okay, buddy cop movies is what we're talking about. And if you guys want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. Hobbs and Shaw, continuing the buddy cop thing and the spinoff thing, which we're going to get to as well. And if you want to jump in here, it's 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Let's break here for the news, and then we'll get back to it right here on WGN. Right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Two for Tuesday. Yeah, man, two for Tuesday. Who was that requesting?
So that's coming to us from Thomas the Doobie Brothers.
Oh, the Doobies. All right.
Rolling Doobies.
That's right, man. You're going to be doing a lot of doobie rolling.
I can't tell, Dad. Is that Bill Shakespeare?
Yeah. I wish you would shut your yapper. So you know that when he went through the table, when Chris Farley goes through the table, nobody knew that was going to happen. He talked to the prop guy and switched out a breakaway table. And then, so he goes through the table and, you know, obviously, Christina Applegate and Spade lose it. The only person on stage who doesn't break? Phil Hartman.
Consummate professional.
The greatest SNL cast member of all time, in my opinion. The best cast member in the history of SNL, Phil Hartman. They used to call him the glue. That's because he was. And it didn't matter sketch he was in, he was always the best thing in the sketch.
Mm-hmm.
And even if it was a terrible sketch, he would always make it better. He was the best. He was the best cast member in SNL history. He was so good. But yeah, that Chris Farley busting through the table. I remember the first time I saw the Matt Foley sketch. Now, that was a character that he did at Second City.
Yeah.
Like, he originated at Second City. He and Bob Odenkirk. Mm-hmm. That's why Odenkirk gets a writing credit for that sketch, because he and Odenkirk pretty much, you know,
Came up with the idea.
They did it at Second City on stage on, you know, over there on Wells. And that was one of the deals where, you know, when I was studying at Second City, as I've said this before, Farley was on the main stage. So I got to see him on stage a lot, and he was unbelievable. He dominated a great cast. Like, it was a really, really strong cast.
Very strong.
But he was like, you know.
He was the superstar.
Yeah.
I'm 35 years old and I am divorced.
Yeah. So Men in Black is here on the list of buddy cop movies. The first Men in Black is a really funny movie. The other ones are terrible. The other Men in Black movies are just absolutely terrible. But the first one is funny. And a lot of that has to do with just like sort of Tommy Lee Jones. Tommy Lee Jones is really, really funny. You know, doing the whole deadpan, you know, sort of like angry old guy thing. But yeah, that's the it's the only like sort of Men in Black movie. It's the only sort of Will Smith movie that I like. I'm trying to think of some of the we've talked about this before. 6 Degrees of Separation, I think, is the only other one that I liked that Will Smith was in. He's made nothing. He's terrible. Makes terrible movies. I like the Legend, I Am Legend, till the end. Didn't like the end, but
Dane tried to call that a zombie movie yesterday.
Eh.
That was my response. I'm like, yeah, yes and no.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's they're technically they're not zombies.
They're vampires.
That's why everybody calls, you know, 28 Days Later, it's a zombie movie. No, it's not. Zombies die and then come back to life. That's what a zombie is. Everybody was like, oh, fast zombies and 28 Days Later, they're people who are infected with a disease.
They got a fever.
They're not zombies. I tried to explain this to one of my friends. He's like, no, they're zombies. I'm like, no, they're not. Zombies die and then they come back from the grave. That's what a zombie is.
Science.
It's just, you know, 28 Days Later, they're not zombies. And everybody was like, oh, it's a great zombie movie. It's not a zombie movie. Ron the Millwright says the Highwaymen had to have already been mentioned, right? No. Have not been mentioned.
The Netflix movie about Bonnie and Clyde, was that the Highwaymen?
I guess. What about Robert Downey Jr. As Sherlock Holmes as a detective buddy cop movie? Was it him and Jude Law?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those movies suck. It's again, Guy Ritchie. 815 says, I like the original Men in Black. Next year, they mention 48 Hours, which to me is the, you know, I think the quintessential buddy cop movie. And then you got Lethal Weapon, which everybody loves but me. I'm the only person who doesn't like those movies. Well, they put a Kurosawa movie on here. They got Stray Dog on here.
Yeah.
Which is that's a good choice. It's a good
choice.
Very
good choice.
Yeah. In the Heat of the Night with Sidney Poitier and Rod Steiger. I haven't seen that movie in a really long time.
Yeah.
So they put 7 on this list.
That's a move. That's definitely a move.
Certainly darker than anything else on the list. That, of course, is the point. The genius of David Fincher's uncompromising thriller is that it takes all you think you're not going to get from these two mismatched cops working together. And it's ultimately horrifying. You see the older, world-weary cop, a fantastic Morgan Freeman, learn to respect the younger, more idealistic but intense cop played by Brad Pitt. A million times before, but you've never seen it played out quite like this. It's the photo negative of a buddy cop movie. This is what happens when it all goes wrong. Yeah, I still love that movie. I do. And I know a lot of people, you know, people think I'm nuts because I've seen it like 1,000 times. And I've watched it over and over again. And I can still watch it again. I can just, you know. People are like, how could you watch this movie? How could you watch 7 over and over again? Because it's awesome.
Sometimes I usually have to pause it and like take a break when they have the bit where John C. McGinley and the rest of the SWAT team
find him in the back.
Ooh,
no,
God.
The sloth dude. He's still alive.
He's still alive.
Well, when he wakes up, it's one of the scariest things. It's one of the scary. I jumped out of my seat like 50 feet.
Jeez,
he's alive. This son of a bitch is alive. And it's all those air fresheners in the room and all that. Oh God. Hey, yeah, no, that's a pretty spectacular movie. I really love it. And then finally, The French Connection is considered the number one buddy cop movie, which I never really thought of as a buddy cop movie, but Roy Scheider is his buddy.
Roy Scheider.
William Friedkin's masterpiece laid the groundwork for an essential aspect of any buddy cop movie. Two tough cops who don't want to work together have to and are better because of it. But because the film is so stark and grouchy and scuzzy, you barely even remember that Gene Hackman's Popeye Doyle and Roy Scheider's Cloudy Russo were supposed to be the good guys. The car chases remain the standouts, but for our money, it's the streets of New York that star. The movie is fiction, though based on real events, and yet the film feels so true to life that it almost plays like a documentary. At this particular moment in time, it was perfectly captured by The French Connection, and it would never feel more urgent or raw. Yeah, French Connection, man. I know everybody talks about the car chase, and it is, you know, car versus L.
Yeah.
It's pretty spectacular, obviously. But
the car chase.
But Hackman is so good in the movie.
You picking your feet in Poughkeepsie?
He's the best. Hey, you want a milkshake? When he comes in and grabs everybody's dope in the bar. Hey, you want a milkshake?
The thing that for the longest time, didn't get the picking your feet in Poughkeepsie thing. Mm-hmm. I was just like, why is he saying that? Why does he keep saying that? And I had to, like, go online and look at ask a forum, be like, I don't get the picking your feet in Poughkeepsie. And then someone explained to me it's a diversion tactic.
Right.
It's supposed to be him trying to confuse his perp.
Right.
And I was like, oh, wow, that's flipping genius.
Well, I just remember, I was a kid when I saw French Connection, so I didn't quite grasp it. It wasn't until a little, you know, later on that I'd seen it a few more times. But I just remember, you know, one of the first times I saw it, I was like, there are a lot of scenes in the French Connection with no dialogue where he's just following people. Like, he's just following the dude. There are long sequences, like getting on the train, getting off the train, that whole thing, where he's just following this guy. And then Roy Scheider, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, the French Connection is known for its car chase, like the legendary car chase. Roy Scheider did a movie a few years later, and just by association with the French Connection, because he's in the French Connection, they did this movie called The Seven Ups. Have you ever seen The Seven Ups?
No.
It's your basic sort of 70s, you know, cop movie, but it contains like another unbelievable car chase where they're ripping doors off cars and stuff like that. So Roy Scheider, just by association with the French Connection, became attached to the car chase genre. And the Seven Ups is a really entertaining movie. I can't remember who else is in it. I know it was an Italian production. And it sports one of those, you know, when people put together articles or lists about the best car chases of all time, The Seven Ups is usually mentioned.
Yeah, you got Tony LoBianco.
Right, Tony LoBianco, that's right.
Richard Lynch.
The great Richard Lynch.
Yeah, the great Richard Lynch.
Richard Lynch, one of the greatest villain character actors of all time.
He's awesome.
Yeah. If you saw his face, you'd know him. You might not know him Richard Lynch by his name, but you look at this guy's mug and you're like, oh, that guy.
Yeah, he's mean mugging.
Because he's one of those guys in the 70s who was on TV shows. He was in movies, and he always played a psycho villain because he's got that kind of face.
Yeah, he was the heavy.
So, but yeah, the Seven Ups. All right, we got a break, and then we're going to talk about movies that were spinoffs of other movies, because that's what Hobbs and Shaw is. So we'll get into that, too. It's 312-981-7200 if you want to join us. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. And it's Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, 2 for Tuesday. Wrapping up Doobie Brothers. Coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Every time I hear the Doobie Brothers, I always think of the show What's Happening. You ever see the show What's Happening?
No, what's happening?
You don't know what's happening is?
No.
Oh,
no,
come
man.
On, man. show from the 70s into the 80s featuring Raj and Rerun. And it was an African-American comedy series. You don't remember Rerun? You don't remember Big Rerun?
It sounds familiar.
I'm trying to remember the third character's name. Dwayne. So it was Raj, Dwayne, and Rerun. And they had wacky adventures. It was your average. It was an ABC sitcom from the 70s. Very popular. It was very, very popular at the time. But the thing that I remember every time I hear the Doobie Brothers, and I'm sure that people who are around my age who watched, you know, What's Happening back in the 70s, always remember the Doobie Brothers episode. Because the Doobie Brothers were the Doobie Brothers were a very odd choice to be featured on What's Happening. A very odd choice. But the plot was that Rerun, who is the sort of the big dude, he's kind of a hefty fella who could also break dance. Like, he was one of the first sort of like kind of popping and locking breakdancing kind of guys back
nice,
in the '70s.
Very nice.
And he was Fred Berry was his name, the actor's name, Fred Berry. And he was very nimble for a big guy because he was an overweight dude, but he was very nimble and he could dance. So they were all excited. Everybody was excited because the Doobie Brothers were coming to town in this episode, which just seems to me very strange. The Doobie Brothers, not the most popular band among African Americans. The Doobies.
No, probably not.
And not a band that you would think would show up on What's Happening and the characters be so excited. So Rerun, and I can't remember how it got to this, what happened, but I guess someone paid Rerun to bootleg the Doobie Brothers concert. I know you're laughing, but this was a real episode. And so Rerun's like in the front row at the Doobie Brothers show, and he's got a cassette recorder, like a handheld like cassette player recorder in his pocket, and he's bootlegging and recording the Doobie Brothers concert. And I can't remember, if I remember correctly, it was somebody that a friend of a friend or something offered Rerun a bunch of money to bootleg the Doobie Brothers concert, as if that's not the most ridiculous plot that you could possibly imagine, and a bunch of characters who would never have gone to a Doobie Brothers show.
You got
let alone
Doobie show.
Bootleg it. So what happens is Rerun's in the front. He's, you know, he's got the cassette recorder and he's dancing around because the Doobies are so great.
Who doesn't love a good Doobie?
And so the Doobies are playing, and the cassette falls out. The cassette player falls out on the floor in front of them. And so they stop. And then they talk to Rerun and say, Why are you taping our concert? And the Doobie Brothers give Rerun a real going over in a speech about how wrong it is to bootleg concerts. So Rerun learned his lesson directly from the Doobies.
Who would have ever thought that the Doobie Brothers, you know, would be so against copyright infringement?
It's just, I mean, and I just remember it was just so ridiculous because it's like a little handheld cassette thing, and
yeah,
it falls out on the floor. I bet you could probably see the because it's kind of a legendary episode of 70s television. Was, you know, I bet you can just Google Doobie Brothers, What's Happening, and everything, you know, all of that stuff will pop up.
Well, now you got me interested. Apparently, you can get the entire series, all 65 episodes, for the low price of $14.
14 bucks for all of What's Happening?
For all of What's Happening.
You know, they did a sequel to it called What's Happening Now, which was years later. It was years after What's Happening. What's Happening Now.
What's Happening Later.
And What's Happening was an ABC show. What's Happening Now was like years later, and it was syndicated. And it followed the characters as they were, you know, like full-on adults, because they were like teenager-type kids. And the big deal was the little sister, like Raj.
Yeah.
Had a smart-ass little sister. And she became like the, you know, she was like, she got all the, you know, like the smart aleck laugh lines in the show were all given to, I can't remember the actress's name, but they were all given, I can't even remember the character's name. I just know she was Raj's little sister. And she would come out, make a smart aleck remark, and then leave. That's all she did. And then Rerun would like do some popping and locking, and he would do some dance moves. And Dwayne, the guy who played Dwayne, his catchphrase was, hey, hey, hey. So he had a catchphrase. I think they all had catchphrases. I'm not mistaken. I think Raj had a catchphrase, too. But yeah, no, that show was really popular, like in the mid to late 70s. It was a very, very popular show. Yeah, and I think the most sort of legendary episode was the Doobie Brothers bootleg episode. So, we have another Doobie Brothers conversation. Here's Witt on WGN. Hey, Witt.
Dude, you missed the best part of that episode.
Which was what?
The Doobie Brothers episode.
Yeah, no, what did I miss?
The best part of the episode is when Raj came up to the Doobie Brothers and asked them, which Doobie you be? You forgot that?
I did. I totally forgot.
Oh!
Which
all that other crap you talk about, I forgot about all that. I just remembered the line.
Which Doobie you be?
Yeah.
Yeah. What was Raj's little sister's name? Do you remember?
Oh,
I can't remember.
God,
I can't remember her name.
It's on the tip of my tongue. I cannot.
And then Dwayne's catchphrase was "Hey, hey, hey."
If, hey, I still use that. Hey, hey, hey.
Oh man! All right, Witt. Thanks, man.
Later, mate.
All right, take care, buddy. Which Doobie you be?
She played the tattletale little sister, Dee Thomas.
Ah, Dee. Yeah, that's right, Dee.
Yeah, from What's Happening.
Oh, man.
That's which Doobie you be?
Which Doobie you be?
Holy cow.
Yeah, man, What's Happening? Yeah, that was a ratings juggernaut for ABC.
Yeah, I think I might have to stop on over at Best Buy, get myself.
Well, $14.
$14.
I mean, that's
a
buy.
Yeah, what was it, a half-hour comedy?
Half-hour.
Yeah, not too bad.
See how much they charging for What's Happening Now?
it's free. Comes with
you get What's Happening Now for free.
That's now you'll never not know what's happening.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Fred Berry passed away.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, he passed away. He was young too.
52.
Yeah. So, but he was you know, that was a big show, man. Hey, hey, hey. D. What's happening? All right, well, there you go. For all you Doobie Brothers fans out there, don't bootleg a Doobie Brothers concert. That's the lesson that you learned. All right, we're going to break here for the news. When we come back, we're going to talk about the best and worst movie spinoffs right here on WGN.
And sometimes in the dark of night,
right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago on this Tuesday morning. Yeah, man, two for Tuesday. What was that, and who requested it?
So it was a little Allman Brothers coming to us from Scott in Streamwood.
All right, there you go. Little Allman Brothers on two for Tuesday. They're not as good as the Doobie Brothers. Here's the thing. The Allman Brothers were actually brothers, but there was nobody named Doobie. In the Doobie Brothers.
No.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate.
And we were talking about the Doobie Brothers because of that legendary, classic, masterpiece of television episode, which would be What's Happening. You said you have a little What's Happening audio?
Yes, this is when they called the Doobie Brothers room here.
Oh, boy.
Ah, hello there. The Doobie Brothers room, please. And I'll speak with any Doobie who do be in.
Hello there. I be Roger Thomas. Which Doobie you be?
There it is, man. That's classic TV right there. You don't know what you were missing, man.
I clearly don't. I mean, that's funny to me. I like that. I would watch more of that.
Yeah, that was a very, it was a very funny show. I remember, you know, I mean, I was a kid when it was on. You know, I was like, I don't know, 10, 11 years old when that show was on, and I remember thinking it was funny. But, you know, when you're 10, you think a lot of stuff is funny.
Sure. I used to watch insane reruns of Full House. I used to love Full House. Now I can't stand it anymore.
I've never seen a full episode. I've never seen an entire episode of Full House, ever.
I mean, it was just on. For some reason, there was something about it being on Nick at Night that a lot of people my age really formed an attachment to Full House, even though we never watched it during its initial run.
Yeah.
It was definitely like here and gone by the time we were old enough to remember it.
Like I said, I've never seen a full episode. You know what I watched? Because very little to choose from in the hotel room in terms of TV choices. You know what I mean? Like you're in a hotel. I was in a hotel all weekend.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
So I had Friends on. That show's terrible.
Yeah, I never really got the appeal.
That show is terrible. I saw an episode of it where, God, I don't even remember what it was, but I sat there watching it. Oh. It was like there was one with Jean-Claude Van Damme and Jennifer Aniston and Courtney Cox both wanted to date him. And he was Jean-Claude Van Damme. He played himself.
He was the muscles from Brussels.
Yeah, and Julia Roberts was in it. And Julia Roberts played a childhood friend of Matthew Perry's, who I guess he made fun of in the fourth grade. It was terrible. I mean, I watched it. I'm like, what the hell is this? I'm like, this is the writing was so bad. And then, I mean, the acting was completely over. There was another episode there where, like, Hank Azaria shows up and was, like, an ex-boyfriend of Lisa Kudrow's.
Mm-hmm.
And Paul Rudd played her boyfriend.
Yeah. I'm guessing the previous one you're mentioning, it sounds like it was, like, late period Friends, probably in the latter half of its run. Because that's when they could throw around the weight and get like, Julia Roberts and Jean-Claude Van Damme in the same episode.
You know, it's on in here in the studio,
right?
With the sound down.
3:30, right?
It's on at 3:30, and it's on at 12:30. So it's like right before we go on the air, and then like right before the final hour of the show, it's on. And so I've seen a lot of the big stars that are like Sean Penn was on it.
Yeah,
Tom Selleck was like Courtney Cox's boyfriend. Ron Liebman, as we mentioned before, Kaz himself is Jennifer Aniston's dad. But I mean, so I'm sitting in the room waiting for the fest to start. I'm I'm all showered and I'm just kind of sitting on the bed, like not believing what I was. It was terrible, like really, really bad writing and like really bad acting. And I was like, this is like one of the most beloved sitcoms of all time. And the ratings were through the roof and it was must see TV. And I'm watching this. I'm like, man, this is terrible. The only other full episode I ever saw of Friends, because I never saw a full episode of Friends ever, was when I was stuck on a plane. We were on the tarmac at LaGuardia. We were out there for like, 2 hours waiting for the gate to open LaGuardia, because LaGuardia is such a great airport. Runs so smoothly, LaGuardia. It's like it barely qualifies as an airport, that place. But anyway, we're sitting on the tarmac, and so one of the flight attendants just went, "Here you go, enjoy," and popped in a
Friends tape.
A video cassette of Friends.
Couldn't have been Drew Carey? Come on. A little Drew Carey show.
Drew Carey, sure, man. Because you got Craigie Ferg on
there. Got Craigie Ferg. You got whoever played Mimi.
She was hilarious.
So funny.
That show was funny, man. And Ryan Stiles and Diedrich Bader.
Diedrich. I always forget his name.
Those guys were hilarious.
Yeah. I always remember Diedrich Bader as just being on the Drew Carey show and in Office Space.
Well, wait a minute now. Do you watch Better Things with Pamela Adlon?
No, remember, I haven't gotten to start
right.
that
He's
yet.
Unbelievable on that
He's
show.
He's in it?
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. He plays like her gay best friend.
Very cool.
And he's great. He's really, really great on it. But yeah, no, Drew Carey was a funny show, man.
Very funny.
That was a funny show. And I would like to thank Drew Carey for giving Craig Ferguson his first big job in the U.S. So, okay. All right. Well, now we're talking about movie spinoffs, because Hobbs and Nobbs is a spinoff of Fast and Furious. And there were movie spinoffs. There have been plenty of popular television spinoffs that are celebrated today. However, it's a little tougher to make good on such an effort in a movie. Intentions are good at the beginning, and it's tempting to want to capitalize off of popular film franchises. While some work, others fall tremendously flat on their faces. And here's a look at some of the good and bad when it comes to movies that were shown in theaters, not made for TV or DVD spinoffs, alternating good and bad, and it's in chronological order. Here's one of the best, A Shot in the Dark. You ever see A Shot in the Dark?
Yeah, it's Pink Panther.
Yeah. You've seen all the Pink Panther movies?
Oh, required viewing in the house.
The funniest Pink Panther movie of all time, for me, is The Pink Panther Strikes Back. That's the one, well, basically, that's the one where Herbert Lom has lost his mind and becomes the bad guy at this point because he's basically gone nuts because of Clouseau. Pink Panther Strikes Back has so many classic bits in it. I mean, all of the Pink Panther movies are good. The later ones, not so much. But The Pink Panther Strikes Back has got the whole sequence where he's questioning the people at this estate, and he's up in the gym in the parallel bars, and he's like, "Oh, it's all coming back to me now." And then he does the parallel bars. He goes flying down the staircase, falls down the staircase, and gets up. And he's in a room full of people that he's gonna ask questions to, and he gets his hand stuck in the mace, where he's got the metal, he's got the knight metal, his hand in his mace stuck to it. He goes, "You must be the beekeeper," and he smashes the beekeeper in the face with the mace. That's where he's got the hunchback costume, and it blows up real big, and he's floating outside on the phone.
I always feel bad because they all kind of run together. I just remember bits.
That's the one with the laughing gas where Herbert Lom and him are in the castle.
Yeah. But do you know, maybe you can have, there are two bits that I always have loved that me and my dad used to love. The one where he fights Kato and Kato jumps out of the fridge.
That Strikes Back.
Is that Strikes Back? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And then.
That's where they end up smashing through the wall of the restaurant.
Yeah. 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 And then the one where there's a dog and he's like, "Oh, does your dog bite?" No? Well, how? You said your dog does not bite. Well, that is not my dog.
That is not my dog. But no, the best part of that, because the dog goes, takes a chunk out of Peter Sellers' hand. "You mind if I pet your dog?" Oh, Peter Sellers, man. Guy was a genius.
It's all coming back to me
It's all coming back to me now. He goes flying over the... The beekeeper is my favorite, though. "You must be the beekeeper," smashes him in the face with amazing. The beekeeper's wearing the thing on his head.
Yeah.
They're just standing there, but they're in a room. They're like not outside. They're all in a room. He's going to question everybody, and the guy's saying, "You must be the beekeeper." Oh, man, those movies are funny. But yeah, Strikes Back is like, it's like bit after bit after bit after bit.
If you're going to get someone into the Pink Panther, that's the one.
Oh, so funny. And Herbert Lom, man. I don't think enough people acknowledge how funny he is in those movies, especially when he goes nuts and he's got the twitch. Because that's also the one where he's in the mental institution at the beginning of the movie. And, he's like, the doctor's, he's like, "I feel better now and I'm ready to go." And, you know, the doctor is like, "Oh, we're going to release you." And then he gets a visit from Clouseau, and then he's back insane again. He's got the twitch and everything. He's just good. Oh, man, those movies are funny. All right, we got a break here. We got some weather here we're going to do when we come back. Movie spinoffs. The first one that we talked about right here, a great spinoff called A Shot in the Dark. Which was a spinoff of the Pink Panther series. And a terrific movie. Elke Summers in that one, too. Last Sunday morning, the sunshine felt like noon. Week before, they all seemed the same. With the help of God and true friends, I come to realize. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. That finishes up the Allman Brothers 2 for 2 for Tuesday. You hear me, 2 for Tuesday? 312-981-7200. We're talking about the best and worst movie spinoffs, Hobbs and Shaw. is a spinoff of the Fast and Furious franchise, so we're talking about movies that are spinoffs. And we got some texts here. If you want to jump in with talk or text, it's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Mark the Breadman says, my pick for favorite movie spinoff would be Rogue One. I would agree with that. I loved Rogue One. It's, as I've mentioned before, it's actually my favorite Star Wars movie of any Star Wars movie, and I'm including the original trilogy. Ike from Country Club Hill says, I enjoyed Bumblebee, which is a spinoff of the Transformers. No, I never got to see that.
It did surprisingly well.
People, it did. Everybody I know who saw it said it was the only good Transformers movie, which, and I love the lead. I love Hailee Steinfeld. I think she's fantastic. So
she's looking for a robot with true grit.
Did you ever see Edge of 17?
Yeah.
I love that movie.
It was really good.
Seriously, it was one of my favorite movies that year. I love that movie.
The back and forth between her and Woody Harrelson
was
so funny.
Unbelievable. She's great in that movie.
Yeah.
It's a great performance. Both of them, the girl from the Shyamalama Ding Dong movies plays her best friend.
Mm-hmm.
She's in the Glass and whatever the hell the other one. She's not in Glass. She's in, what the hell is it called? Split? She's in Split. She's one of the girls that's been captured by...
but not Anna Taylor-Joy.
McAvoy. No, not her. So, not the girl from The Witch.
Let's see. Haley Lou Richardson?
That's her.
That's it, yeah.
She's great, man. She's a terrific actress.
Yeah. A little bit of Blake Jenner for all the Everybody Wants
he's
Some
great.
Fans.
He's really good. Now, that movie's really good. Like, it's a really sweet movie, and it's really... Yeah, no, I love that movie. It's really, truly like one of my favorite coming-of-age movies.
Yeah, I think until I saw Lady Bird, did that and Lady Bird come out the same? No, it was the year before Lady Bird. I think that Edge of 17, for me, kicked off like a really great string of high school movies that just, they weren't dumb. They didn't belittle the people
in
it.
And Lady Bird is a great movie. Well, first of all, Saoirse's in it, so that right there.
Because, I mean, you get three great years. You get Edge of 17, 2016. You got Lady Bird in 2017. I know this year you got Booksmart. I'm trying to think of last year. I feel like there was a teen movie in that same vein that was just like really competent.
I'll tell you what, the movie that I'm looking forward to now is that what is supposed to be an insanely vulgar movie with the kids, Good Boys. I can't wait to see.
Don't know if I could sit down and watch that because they're like 12. And I'm like, that's so weird.
I can't wait to see it. I think it looks hilarious.
Well, it's from your boy, Seth Rogen.
Yeah. Yeah. But Jacob Tremblay, I think, is phenomenal. I mean, he's such a great actor. Eric saw it at one of the film festivals. I think he saw it at Sundance or something and said it was hilarious.
All right.
So Shot in the Dark is the first one here. The first time we get to meet the character Jacques Clouseau, played by Peter Sellers. Not a direct sequel to The Pink Panther, but it got the ball rolling for the franchise. They say that's one of the best. One of the worst, Supergirl. I always feel bad for Helen Slater because I really like her a lot. But Supergirl was terrible. We should have been able to tell the credibility and popularity of this film. It was doomed when Jimmy Olsen, played by Mark McClure, was the only character from the successful Christopher Reeve Superman show movies to show up. It was a box office bomb. The version, the TV version of Supergirl, starring Melissa Benoist, is going strong.
Yeah, it's like season 5.
Yeah.
Started on CBS, moved over to the CW.
It's on the CW now. All right, that's one of the worst. One of the best, U.S. Marshals. I like U.S. Marshals.
I like it well enough.
I liked it. Not as good as The Fugitive, but I liked it. Depending on an opinion, U.S. Marshals could appear on either side of the debate. We liked it simply from the standpoint that Tommy Lee Jones' character and Deputy Marshal Sam Gerard from The Fugitive is fun to watch and listen to, even if he's not that likable. From an entertainment factor, it works, though it's not in the same league as The Fugitive. Then again, that should not have been the point from the beginning. I remember when they were shooting, they shot U.S. Marshals here. There's a good chunk of it takes place here. And I was working in this office building, a small office building over around Institute Plaza near Wells. And they were shooting U.S. Marshals right outside. We were looking out the window, and we had L-Tracks right by us. and they were shooting U.S. Marshals one day, and we were watching Wesley Snipes running around on the L-tracks. It was like a Thursday afternoon or something. There's Wesley Snipes running around on L-tracks.
Just doing his thing.
Yeah. Yeah. God, I remember, speaking of Wesley Snipes, I remember the first time I saw Blade. I went in with such a low expectation, like ridiculously low expectation, because at that point, you know, Wesley Snipes was making those really stupid action movies, and he was doing like the...
Well, like Money Train?
I actually like Money Train.
Okay, I like...
Him and Woody Harrelson. I love him in White Men Can't Jump.
Yeah. Going to Sizzler, going to Sizzler.
No, he was like, it was like a crazy White House Dead, the White House movie. And then there was Passenger 57, Boiling Point. He had made like four or five movies in a row that were absolutely terrible. And then, so I was not at all looking forward to Blade at all. Like I remember going into the screening going, oh no, another stupid Wesley Snipes, stupid action movie. And I was not looking forward to it. And then it started, and then Blade started. And for those people, obviously, if you've seen Blade, you know the first 10 minutes of that movie is unbelievable. One of the best like opening sequences ever. And I remember sitting in the theater, and when it started, I was like, oh my God. I just couldn't believe how cool it was. And then Blade ended up being great. Terrific movie. So, but yeah, for a while there was a time when Wesley Snipes, you know, was making really stupid movies. All right, but U.S. Marshals considered a really good movie spinoff. All right, how about this? They consider this one of the worst. Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. Jay and Silent Bob finally get their own film. We kind of wish that they didn't. And now there's going to be a reboot. The cameos were funny, and the post-screening of their fictional film in the movie was humorous. However, the plot was relatively weak, kind of jumbled and disorganized, basically all over the place. It was as if the dynamic duo thought it up while they were stoned at a party in Asbury Park one night. Yeah, I guess I can. One of the running gags that I liked was at the end of the movie where they, because famously, Kevin Smith went off on Magnolia in real life. He went off on the movie Magnolia, which is, of course, my favorite movie of all time. And they do have this really funny scene at the end of the movie where they're going door to door to find Magnolia fan because he's trashing him on the internet, and they beat the crap out of the kid. He's like a kid, and they beat the crap out of him. That was funny. That and the cameos by Affleck and Damon.
Yeah.
Were hilarious.
Jason Biggs is in it.
Yeah. It had moments. It was, I thought there were some pretty big laughs in it.
Yeah, it's not a game changer. It's not my favorite of his, but
yeah,
it's funny enough.
Yep. All right, let's take a break here. We'll got a break here for the news, and we'll come back. We've got more movie spinoffs. What are the best? What are the worst movie spinoffs of all time? 312-981-7200. Wow. All right. Who requested the Tommy James?
It's coming to us from Kathy.
Kathy, nice work. Tommy James was the first... Tommy James and the Shondells was the first band that I was ever obsessed with as a little kid. I love Tommy James and the Shondells.
Yeah, they're great. They're great.
And I loved them. And yeah! 2 for Tuesday, 312-981-7200. Yeah, no, I love Tommy James and the Shondells. I remember... Steve and Johnny had Tommy James on one time, and I called in, and I was nervous just to talk to Tommy James.
No, they're coming to town not too long from now.
I wonder if he's with the Shondells. I wonder whatever happened to all the Shondells. But they were guys. I loved those guys. I love Tommy James and the Shondells. They were the best. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. You know that there's another alligator in the news?
Oh, God.
Some dude in Albany Park had an alligator in his house he kept it. They he was also had a bunch of drugs and a bunch of other crap in his house. He got arrested and they had to confiscate the alligator. So now the alligator has been confiscated. So there's another alligator on the northwest side of the city.
Oh my.
Representing my old hood.
Yeah. I lived there too, man. I lived there too.
The yep. Albany Park Gators.
Yeah, we were over at like Wilson and St. Louis. That's where I lived. You know the area. You know the area very well.
Know Vic. It well.
Yep. Wilson and St. Louis. Interesting little area.
Missed the tamales, I got to say that.
Oh, yes.
Oh, I miss them.
Yeah. Do you think it was a meth gator?
I don't know. There were drugs and stuff, though, but they busted this guy. They busted into his house. But they just showed it on Channel 9. They confiscated the alligator. Like, what's going on with all this alligator stuff?
Why is there an alligator in the evidence lockup?
Why is an alligator in the north? You know, I live in Albany Park. I got an alligator. You know, the river's not very far from there. Mm. You know, you're right off the river, you know.
That's true.
If you live in Albany Park. So, we are talking about movie spinoffs. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. I cannot believe that they put this one on the best list of best spinoff movie spinoffs. Get Him to the Greek.
I really like that movie.
Oh, come on.
I think that's a pretty good spinoff of Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Yeah, well, my problem is I can't stand Russell Brand.
He's funny to me in certain contexts.
And I also, you know, Jonah Hill. Best part of that movie was Elizabeth Moss.
Yeah.
She's the best, part of the movie. She's the best part of a lot of things. God, I can't wait to see The Kitchen.
It's going to be cool. It's going to be very cool.
I get home this morning. I'm going to watch last night's Kimmel.
Oh, is she on?
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
Yes, yes. Yes, she is.
Talk about The Kitchen.
I love her. I love her very much. I was telling Virginia Madsen. Oh, get this. So for those of you who, you know, tuned in late, I was off yesterday and I was off Friday because I spent the whole weekend at the Flashback Weekend Horror Convention, which I do every year. Crown Plaza, I'm one of the hosts. And I'm, you know, and Tom, you were there. It was fun and it was great. And one of the celebrity guests that was there, was Virginia Madsen. And Virginia Madsen, I'd never met her before. You know, she's from Chicago. And she was so lovely. It's incredible how nice she was, how lovely she was. And she put up with me just fawning over her performance and sideways. I just wouldn't stop. And she was like very, you know, she's very patient because I just kept talking about how much I love Sideways and how much I loved her in it. And
well, it was probably a good refresher from Candyman. People talking about how much.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Candyman. That's why she was there. Yeah. You know, as you know, that's the, you know, she was there. She was in that. She was also in Dune, and which kind of falls into that category. Dune, by the way, which was on. We came in last night.
It was on BBC America.
It was on BBC America last night.
Dune.
I love that movie. Anyway, so. You know, I'm talking to her when I first met her. We're talking and hanging out, and her niece happened to be there too because she's from Chicago and she was there. Big fan of Svengoolie, so I got
that was adorable.
I brought her up on stage, during the Svengoolie 40th anniversary thing, which turned out great. But anyway, I was talking to her, and I was like, "You were so good in Her Smell," you know, and I said, "What great casting, you playing Elizabeth Moss's mom," you know. I said, "That's fantastic. You were great in it." She's not seen it.
Wait, she hasn't seen Her Smell?
No. She's not seen it. She said she was out of town when they premiered it.
Yeah.
And it hasn't played anywhere, you know, so she's not seen it. And I'm like, "Well, you're good in it. I just, you're really, really good in it." But she's not, I don't know, she's not seen it.
That's such a weird, specific phenomenon.
Yeah.
Like, to be an actor. And I mean, I'm sure if you're in a lot of stuff, there's stuff you just don't see. Or don't, like, really remember being in.
Yeah. Everybody's got those. But she should see it because she's really great in it. And I told her, I said, "Elizabeth Moss is unbelievable." And Virginia Madsen goes, "Well, of course." she said working with her was really pretty intense and really great.
I imagine.
Yeah. So anyway, Get Him to the Greek. They consider one of the best spinoffs. I didn't think it was funny. Forgetting Sarah Marshall, I thought was okay. I didn't think it was great. I thought it was okay. And I really didn't need to see so much of Jason Segel in that movie.
Be bashful.
That was just, you know, like, okay.
I thought it was hilarious.
Yeah. Well, again, that falls into that whole, you know, that Apatow thing that I have, like, not a huge...
Yeah.
I just don't have a lot of... I mean, after a while, I'm like, all right. And I remember watching Funny People getting angry. Watching Funny People.
Well, that movie frustrates me because at the kernel of it, at the center, there's actually a really good story to be told and something really interesting to be done with Adam Sandler specifically.
Yeah.
Because it uses so many of its moments to make fun of Adam Sandler's career.
Yeah.
And then it just diverts into something completely unnecessary and misses the emotional point.
Do we really, really, really need to see Judd Apatow and Leslie Mann's kids recital? Is that something we really need to see? Like, dedicate 8 minutes of footage to show your kid? And by the way, I think Maude Apatow is hilarious.
Yeah.
I think she's great. I mean, but she was much younger then.
Mm-hmm.
But I think she's fantastic.
Yeah, she's very, very good.
All right, worst spinoff, The Scorpion King.
Yeah, probably.
I actually kind of like The Scorpion King.
I got a kick out of it because they would play on like TNT on the weekends.
They would show
The Mummy, The Mummy Returns, and then The Scorpion King all in a row.
Those movies are specifically made for that kind of thing.
Right.
You know?
It's a total afternoon, like, you don't know what you're doing. It's hot outside.
It's considered a prequel in some circles, but it predates both The Mummy and The Mummy Returns. Dwayne The Rock Johnson earned his first in-depth role as The Scorpion King. For those who are into the Mummy franchise, it was probably worth their time, but otherwise a whole lot of cheese to digest. Puss in Boots, they say, is one of the best. Hilarious.
What?
I thought it was hilarious. I thought Bendejas was great.
What? Bendejas?
Yeah, that's what we call him. My old buddy, my old roommate, Scott, and I, we lived together for a while. And we used to watch The Scorpion King, or not The Scorpion, we used to watch the Mambo Kings regularly. Like, that was one of our go-tos. You know, it would either be Dazed and Confused or the Mambo Kings. And we used to call him Antonio Bendejas. So that's what I just refer to him. But I thought Puss in Boots was really funny. I thought it was really funny. And I thought the character was great. He did a great job with it. Worse, The Chronicles of Riddick.
Which is really sad because Pitch Black is an awesome movie.
Pitch Black is great.
It's very cool.
Pitch Black is great. It was the first date I went on with Cheeto Fingers.
Was to go see Pitch Black?
Yeah, that was our first date.
That's pretty rad.
Yeah. Yep. But I thought Pitch Black was pretty great. Well, you know what? The other one was not bad. The other Riddick movie.
The one that's just called Riddick?
Yeah, that was actually pretty good.
That was more of a return to form.
But the Chronicles of Riddick was terrible.
Well, they tried to make it like this big space opera.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's not what made this cool.
But yeah, no, Pitch Black was a cool movie. That was cool. Vin Diesel was on a tear then because the first Fast and the Furious movie came out like 7 months later.
Yeah, because Pitch Black was February 18th, 2000. Wow.
Yeah, that was my first date with. That's about right. That was our first official date. We had seen each other for a while at that point, but that was our first official date. Was Pitch Black? I'm trying to remember. I was writing this monologue thing about how I was trying to coordinate to try and figure out, you know, like relationships I've had over the past. And tried to narrow down why we broke up to the first movie we saw together. So, Pitch Black, I was thinking about, well, Pitch Black, that was kind of an inauspicious way to begin a relationship. But the first movie I ever saw with my second ex-wife, Heather, was Sideways, was the first movie we saw.
Oof.
What's the first movie we saw together?
Yeah.
And I was pushing 40 at that time, so the movie really hit me like a ton of bricks. I told that story, of course, to Virginia as well. I'm trying to remember some of the other first dates. I took a girl on a first date to see Dead Ringers, which I've told you already.
Yeah.
I had seen it already. And
such
it was
a move.
It was like, I had already seen it. I took her to see it, and she was just not a fan. I took a first date to see The Fly, speaking of Cronenberg. That turned out okay, though. Even though that's a, you know, that's
took
pretty
a,
fun.
Took a girl on a date to go see 2012.
The John Cusack movie?
Yeah.
Oh, did that suck.
Yeah, it didn't exactly work out, if you can believe it.
That's Roland Emmerich, right?
Yep.
How many times has he blown up the White House?
Oh, God. Well, I mean, Independence Day, he did it. Is he behind those White House Down movies or whatever there with Gerard Butler? Or maybe that's something else.
No, no, but those suck.
He loves to blow up the world.
They got another one coming out. Another one of those Gerard Butler, Morgan Freeman, I gotta save Morgan Freeman movies. I can't even know what something is down. It's another thing that's down.
Oh, God.
Terrible. All right, listen, let's break for the weather here, and then we'll come back and we'll wrap up the show and wrap up the best and worst movie spin-offs of all time. 312-981-7200.
Children behave. That's what they say when we're together. And watch how you play. They don't understand, and so we're running just as fast as we can.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell coming up at 5, and also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. We've been talking about movie spinoffs because of Hobbs and Shaw being a movie spinoff itself. We've been talking about some of the best and some of the worst. Here's what they say. One of the best is The Bourne Legacy. Really? The one with Renner?
I don't know about that.
Well, part of the Bourne family of films, this is a standalone picture starring Jeremy Renner as Agent Aaron Cross, though not the big name like Matt Damon. Renner is solid in the lead role and seems to fit action roles better than Damon in some cases. It's a solid B, and it's worthy of to be part of the popular Bourne franchise. I didn't hate it because I'm a big Jeremy Renner fan, but I wouldn't say it's one of the best of the series.
I wouldn't even say most of the Bourne movies are the best of the Bourne series.
The first one's great.
First one's pretty good.
Now, I think Paul Greengrass rules, and I think the first one's good. I like the second one too.
I just, the shaky cam hurts. It gives me a headache.
Yeah. But you know, I mean, you've seen some of the other stuff that Greengrass has done. You see United 93.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying that Paul Greengrass is a bad director. I'm just, the shaky cam became a little bit too much.
Was it, did you've seen Bloody Sunday, right?
Yeah.
Unbelievable
no,
movie.
Very, very talented guy.
Yeah. How about this, worse, Alien versus Predator? Yeah, it's
wrong.
No, it's a terrible movie.
Wrong.
It's a terrible movie. It's terrible. Some consider this a crossover, though it only, brings these two monster villains to appear in the same movie. It lacks substance. Really? The best, The Wolverine. Now, wait a minute. We're going to get technical here. This is a sequel to the X-Men spinoff regarding Wolverine, X-Men Origins Wolverine, which we will get to later, because that's one of the worst. That X-Men Origins Wolverine movie. How could they pick the Wolverine over Logan?
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, how do you do that? Logan is unbelievable. That movie is unbelievable.
Yeah. I guess, I mean, the Wolverine, I'm trying to think.
I don't even remember it. Is that the one that takes place in the Orient?
Yeah, in Japan, yeah.
Okay.
And it's the same director, too.
Mangold? No,
Yeah, it's James Mangold who did The Wolverine.
I know, and he did the terrible Wolverine, and he did the Origins, which was good. And he did Logan, which is amazing.
Wait, you liked Origins, you didn't like
No,
the...
I don't know which one. Yeah. Whatever the hell, I don't know what they are. The Origins one, I don't... Is that the crappy one?
Yeah, that's the really crappy
one. All right, it's terrible.
Yeah, and then he did The Wolverine, which was pretty good.
Which is good, but Logan is the best.
Logan is the one that he wanted to make from day one, and then they finally let him do it. He wanted to make a rated R movie, and then they finally let him do
Logan,
it.
To me, Logan's the best comic book movie ever made. I think Logan's the best comic book movie ever made.
And I think there's an argument for that.
I mean, before Logan, for me, it was Spider-Man 2. Spider-Man 2 to me was the best comic book movie I'd ever seen.
Sure,
but then I saw Logan and I went, oh. Worst, Elektra. Oh man. But you know what? I mean, it was a spinoff of Daredevil. Daredevil was a piece of crap too.
Yeah. Yeah, that original Daredevil.
The only thing I liked about I like Colin Farrell in Daredevil.
Well, yeah, he was fun as like the Irish bullseye.
Yeah, no, he was fun. I mean, because I love Colin Farrell. I just think he's great. I even loved, did you see the remake of Fright Night?
Yeah, no, why does no one talk about that? No one talks about that remake.
It's a terrific movie.
Yeah, David Tennant is great in it.
David Tennant is hilarious in it.
Yeah, and then it's...
Who's the lead?
Anthony Yelchin.
Oh, that's right. Anthony Yelchin.
The late,
man.
Great Anthony Yelchin.
Yeah.
There's a great documentary coming out about him. A lot. They're bringing back Green Room to theaters. They're bringing back his Star Trek to theaters in anticipation of this this documentary.
Man, that just makes me sad.
Yeah, great young talent.
So Elektra, awful. The best, they consider Minions.
No.
My mom loves those things. The Minions. She loves Minions.
Does she have any like memorabilia?
Oh, I've bought her a ton of stuff. She has Minions. She has Minions slippers.
Oh wow, that's actually really adorable.
No, she's got Minion stuff all over that. All over that. She loves the Minions. Worst Son of the Mask. We mentioned this one before with
Jamie Kennedy.
Jamie Kennedy
doing something.
I don't know. They consider the best spinoff, one of the best spinoffs, Creed. I totally agree.
Yeah.
That was one of the biggest surprises ever, was that movie. You know what I mean? I just didn't expect anything when I went in there, and it's the second best Rocky movie of all time, in
my
opinion.
Agreed.
And Michael B. Jordan is amazing. Stallone should have won the Academy Award that year. And the sequel was good. Creed 2 was good. But, man, I love that movie. Worst Beauty Shop, which was a barbershop spinoff. I don't even remember. I remember seeing it. I don't remember hating it or anything.
Was it Queen Latifah was the lead in that one?
Yeah. You know, they wanted to do a female version of Barbershop, which is cool.
Yeah, it's cool.
I don't even remember one way or the other whether I liked it or whether I didn't like it.
I don't even remember Barbershop all that much.
Oh, Barbershop's hilarious.
I remember enjoying it. I just don't remember really any of the bits or anything.
Cedric the Entertainer talking about Rosa Parks. You remember that?
Nah.
Oh, man.
It sounds like I have to go watch Barbershop.
No, you do. Barbershop's great. Barbershop is a really good... Well, actually, the first, because they did three of them. The first two are really good, especially the first one. The first Barbershop is great. Okay, they consider Deadpool best. I don't know. Worst, National Lampoon's Van Wilder 2, The Rise of Taj, with Cal Penn. Hey, you know my future ex-wife, Dana DiLorenzo?
Yeah.
She's in Harold and Kumar, the 3D Christmas movie?
Yeah, she is.
She talked about how fun it was to work on that movie. It was probably a lot of weed. And then the Evan Almighty is considered one of the worst, which was a terrible movie. All right. We're going to break here. We come back. We'll wrap up the show here tomorrow. Jim Ryan is going to be with us, our good friend. He's going to talk about Lollapalooza. He'll play some Music IQ. We'll also have a round of Know Your Onion. And, of course, it'll be Wildcard Wednesday.